Rhea and things like that?
Yeah, he's been doing it for all sorts of people for so long that, you know, so many people have taken this money for a nice trip with Reverend Moon that, you know, who's gonna risk embarrassment by bringing that out? I mean, people like Chris Matthews went on a trip sponsored by Reverend Moon's, I don't know if he went on a trip, but he appeared at an event held by Reverend Moon's World Media Association, this junket, and took a hefty speaking fee for that. And Moon has managed to pay a lot of people. And, you know, why bring him up when nobody is campaigning against Reverend Moon? You don't see any political ads talking about how the Washington Times is associated with this anti-Christian movement. It remains quiet.
So I think it sounds to me like you're suggesting that Democrats, and not just people in Congress, but progressives of all stripes, need to talk about this. I mean, I'd love to hear, for example, Move On. Wouldn't it be great if Move On did an ad about how much Reverend Sun Young Moon is in charge here?
I would love to see that. I see.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, we made it to Friday, 2 minutes past the hour, a little bit late getting started, my bad. That's what comes of wrestling with one's own chat room. Can't get in right now. I'll be there in a little bit, gang. I guess. But at any rate, I'm all excited because we've got a great conversation on the way. In a matter of minutes, we're expecting a call from Jim Dean, chairman of Democracy for America, to have a little chat about, well, a campaign. A campaign that Democracy for America has going in which I have great hopes. Condi must go. Condi must go. Lord, and shouldn't she? And with all due respect to our pal Jim Dean, a little late getting there, but, you know, better late than never. I've been arguing that she is the single most incompetent human being ever to occupy the office of either National Security Advisor or Secretary of State in the history of the office. But now we've got a darn good reason for demanding that she step down, namely rock-solid, lead-pipe-cinch, Colonel Mustard in the conservatory with the wrench proof that she's a war criminal. Really? Sitting around having tea and crumpets with the rest of the so-called principals. Why do I think of a scene out of Pink Floyd's The Wall when I think of the principals? If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding. You can't have any pudding if we don't torture you first! But yeah, that's how they are. So we'll be talking to Jim Dean about the effort to... That they have begun at Democracy for America to get rid of this hideous, 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 hateful, vitriolic, poisonous, murderous, torturing, anti-American death queen. And that should be taking place here in a couple of minutes. Also tonight,
Internet Explorer has encountered a problem and needs to close. We're sorry for the inconvenience. Bite me, Bill Gates.
Oh, well, what are you going to do? But also tonight, we'll be having our conversation with Carolyn Kay later in the hour after we're done talking with Jim Dean. And I'm looking very much forward to that as well, because last Friday was a screw-up, because, well, not a screw-up, but I just couldn't be on the air because I was getting ready to go to D.C. and back and forth to D.C. and that wonderful meeting with the folks at Accotink Unitarian Universalist Church on Sunday, and so we didn't have a Friday program. But we've got, by golly, a Friday program for you this evening that is loaded for bear. And we'll begin it, as I said just a couple of minutes ago, with Democracy for America Chairman Jim Dean, who has let his weekend start a little bit later so he could join us. Jim, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Bob, thanks for having me on.
I'm just tickled pink to get a chance to talk to you, and I'm really, really proud of you guys for starting this this campaign to get rid of America's most incompetent Secretary of State ever.
Well, I think this whole thing starts with the fact that, and Ned Lamont used to say this all the time, our moral authority in this country is the biggest weapon that we have for against any of our enemies, and it's also the biggest inspiration that we convey to the rest of the world. And, you know, for having a president who likes to talk about democracy and liberty and freedom out of one side of his mouth and then act like a third-world dictator out of the other side, I think it's something that's really not in the best interest of this country. And obviously her role in this, particularly as with respect to lying to Congress, is really unacceptable. It's incredible that she was even considered as or talked about as a vice presidential candidate. And we've just got to go after this if we're going to reestablish it. We can't wait for a new person in the White House to hope that we get back the moral authority of this country, which we need real bad right now.
I'm guessing there's a pretty pat answer, but I'd like to get a little bit of background if I could, Jim. What was the final spark that lit the fire under you guys as far as working toward getting rid of Condi?
Well, there are a lot of things, and I'm somebody who believes that a lot of things add up, but a lot of it has to do with our coalition partners. True Majority and, of course, Robert Greenwald of Brave New Films. I mean, they've been working on this. We've been talking back and forth about it for some time, and obviously when the report came out and the news, that was really a catalyst probably more than anything else, which really showed that, in fact, that, you know, they really had discussed torture, that they really had committed it and supported it and then lied to Congress about it.
Now, you mentioned Robert Greenwald, and you know, what a genius he is.
Oh, he's terrific.
And the whole team there at Brave New Films, by the way, it's not all Bob. There's a lot of other people behind the scenes, and they deserve a lot of credit, too. But they put together a video, if I understand correctly, and that's available. And is this a coalition effort, this CondiMustGo.com website?
Yes, and we urge everybody to go sign this petition. Again, it's really about the fact that it has come to light that she and others in the administration advocated and expressly talked about and discussed torture in these meetings, and then she went to Congress and in testimony to Congress under oath said that they weren't discussing it at all. So she's lied about it. The film that Robert put together is very, very powerful. I would add that it's not something for young kids necessarily to look at because there are some graphic scenes in there, but it really just cuts to the heart of what this is about. And we are urging people to sign the petition because this petition is going to all three presidential candidates, not just Barack Obama and Senator Clinton, but also Senator McCain. We're asking them to sign on to this petition as well. Prove and show the rest of this country that they are prepared to commit to restoring the moral authority of this country.
Well, I've had a look at the video, Jim, and you're right. It's powerful. It's powerful medicine. And, what we're talking about, we're not talking about shades of gray here, are we?
No, we're not. And it's time that we stopped allowing the Bush administration as well as their sort of right-wing shills to try to lawyer their way through this. Torture is torture. Americans have a pretty good common sense meter, and when they see this film as well as, you know, read the other testimony, it's pretty obvious that's what we're talking about.
And the video needs to go viral, if you'll pardon my use of the colloquialism. It needs to be seen by everybody. You know, hardcore, old-style, Eisenhower-type Republicans need to see this film, too, don't they?
Oh, they'll be disgusted with it. We all are. You know, this is not what we're about. This is not what we are as a country. You know, Howard used to say this all the time in his talks, that, you know, when the Berlin Wall fell, it fell because people looked up to the United States of America and looked up to what we stood for. And they wanted to be part of that. That's the real reason that the Berlin Wall fell. And we have eroded all of that in just 8 short years of, you know, really one of the most incompetent and dishonest administrations we've ever had. So we got to get on this. We can't wait for a new elected official. We can't wait for a new president, new congresspeople. Sign the petition. Let's put these candidates' feet to the fire and let them step up to the plate.
Can I ask you a bit of a tough question, please, Jim?
Sure.
How do you... Given what appears to be the great weight of evidence against Condoleezza Rice, do you believe it would be appropriate for criminal charges to be lodged?
Well, I mean, I certainly think it's appropriate to look into it. I'm not an attorney. You know, this sort of gets into a larger argument, or a larger, I should say, discussion about holding this administration accountable for a lot of things. And that's something, you know, I think we should pursue. It's been very, very difficult, given the fact that, you know, they've succeeded in taking this country down so far that, you know, it's hard for Congress to juggle an impeachment and meet the challenges that Bush has created, like the deficit, like all the people that are losing their homes and all of that. So, I on the larger context of this thing, I think pursuing, not just Secretary Rice, but other members of this administration for accountability is a good idea and should be looked into to see what legal remedies there are for not only this but a lot of other things that they've done.
One of the things that stood out for me in these torture meeting stories is the notion that John Ashcroft, heavens to Betsy, John, you know, anoints himself with oil on his head, Ashcroft, the guy who put a drape over the dirty, naked statue of justice, that John Ashcroft, this guy is sitting in the principal's meeting and he looks at everybody else. It's taking place inside the White House, and he looks at the rest of them and says, you know, what are we talking about here? History, and I think these are his exact words, history will not judge us kindly.
And, I think, it's hard to tell exactly where he was coming from on that. But, certainly it reminded me of, some of the White House aides during the Watergate era who were sort of protect the president at any cost. And I think, he's also generally troubled by the fact that this is just a really incredibly horrible conversation, not just to be having in the White House, but to be having at this level of government.
Yeah, it's a rotten conversation to have at the McDonald's Playland, for heaven's sakes. I get that part. So it's not just Condi, Jim. Condi is the focus of the petition, and I hope everybody listening to this program will go and sign the petition. But what about the other principals? What about Dick Cheney? What about Don Rumsfeld? What about Ashcroft? The rest of this, gang of thugs.
Well, you pick your spots. There's so much that's got to be done, and in many respects, sometimes very little time. This is a very clear-cut case for us, and one that we really need to get involved with in a hurry. And I think everybody, all the listeners out there, really need to go to this petition and sign it. I'd love to do a lot of things with respect to not only this but the conduct of this administration. Whether we'll be able to get there, or whether somebody else can help take up the mantle, or whether we can act as a coalition partner, I'm sure we'll get there one way or the other. But in this case, this is a very clear situation where the Secretary of State lied to Congress. It's very cut and dry, just like our work on, the Alberto Gonzalez impeachment petition that we had going. Very cut and dry situation that he had lied to Congress as well. And that's something that we need to go after right now.
And I deem what you guys did with the Alberto Gonzalez issues to have been critical in getting his resignation. Let me just ask you, Jim, when we talk about issues like this, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you've sent the petition and made specific requests of all three presidential candidates. On a personal basis, does it make you a little bit crazy to know that there are issues out here like this and then to turn around and see George Snuffleupagus ask questions like, do you believe Pastor Wright loves America like you do? Does that just, I mean, were you one of the Americans who wanted to put his foot through the TV screen the other night?
Yeah, this, it's very clear this was not their best work, and it certainly wasn't, did nothing for network television, to say the very least. When we start talking about, gas prices and all of the issues, and this issue especially, they didn't even bring it up. Fortunately, our coalition partners had an ad up there right after the debate, which ran in Philadelphia, about this particular issue about torture and Condi Rice lying about it. But it's, they didn't ask questions about so many issues that are important to the voters, and, they stuck with a lot of questions that really, we've all moved beyond, and really have become very irrelevant. So, hopefully they're going to learn their lesson in this. There's certainly been enough outcry of it. But we got to press forward. We can't count on the media to do this. We can't count on even elected officials to do this. We've got to be the ones that are having our elected officials back and spurring them on to take action and change this culture of incumbency into a culture of activism in our political leadership.
Does this issue with regard to Condi take on special significance, Jim, based on the periodic blather that seems to be rolling around out there, mentioning her name in regard to a running mate for John McCain?
Well, the goal here is to get her to resign. There's just no excuse for this. We cannot have a political system right now where the executive branch is allowed to lie to the legislative branch and get away with it. And I know they've done this probably on a number of occasions, but we've got to call them out. So the goal here is to get her to resign and get the candidates on board with this. I think in that process, it's going to be very clear that she is not somebody who should be one heartbeat away from the presidency. And I think that'll probably go away very quickly as we move through this whole campaign.
Can you, what else, if you don't mind, I don't want you to completely tip your hand or anything, what are the other issues that are also on the front burner for Democracy for America?
Well, in addition to the leadership development stuff, that's what we're really about, the trainings and helping citizens get involved with politics. We've been very, very involved with the FISA thing, particularly the issue around telecom, retroactive telecom immunity. And we've had a number of petition signings, but also really very effective telephone campaigns, one of which I believe crashed a senator's phone system because, this keeps rearing its ugly head. Every time, we have people that say we're not going to have this, we're not going to have immunity, and everybody votes on it, it seems to keep coming back again in one form or another. And that's something that, that we're going to be in this till the end, until we're very clear that all companies that have been involved with this illegal wiretapping are willing to be accountable. And then we can discuss after that whether there's going to be any immunity or not.
I noticed where, of all people, today Arlen Specter said that blanket immunity was utterly unacceptable. I'm talking to you. Our home studios for the Head On Radio Network are, of course, in West Virginia, so that makes Jay Rockefeller my senator.
Yep.
What in heaven's do you have any idea what's going through his head on FISA?
Well, I don't know, and we're sort of waiting for this to reach another point, and maybe we have to start, having a little discussion about that. To this right now, he's been pretty good on a lot of issues, and I don't know why that he especially is not been so good on this telecom immunity issue. This is a fairly easy thing to deal with.
This seems like a slam dunk.
He pointed out that he's received a lot of campaign contributions from the industry, which is true, and that's very, very troubling. But if there's one guy that should be able to rise above all of that, it's Jay Rockefeller, both because of his circumstances, but also because of his character. So, I'm hoping it's not going to get down this thing much further, and I hope he's going to see the light and kill this thing and put it where it belongs, which is right in the trash can.
I sincerely hope so, along with you. Jim, thank you very much. You've got a marvelous campaign going with regard to CondyMustGo.com. Like I said, I hope everyone will go and sign the petition. I'll be doing so. And please consider this network a friend of Democracy for America. Any issues you want to get out there, don't hesitate to let us know. And, you know, thank you very much for, like I said, extending your Friday evening. It's the weekend for a lot of other people so far, but I appreciate you taking the extra hour.
Well, thank you so much for having me on and giving us the opportunity to talk about a pretty important issue, and hope everyone gets on and signs that petition.
I do, too. Jim Dean, thank you very, very much.
Okay, Bob, you have a good weekend.
You, too. I hope we'll talk soon. Bye now.
Yeah, real good.
Jim Dean, chairman of Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.com. You can go there. There's a link. Being multitaskers that we are, you could go to CondyMustGo.com. Wouldn't it be nice to run her out. Run her out of office. Because she's poison. And she is. And I get what Jim is talking about. In a way, if there is any way of excusing some of this conduct, even remotely, you could say that, well, you know, the Secretary of Defense, he's in the blood and gore and death and destruction business. You know, they're going to sit down and talk about it. The FBI, you know, they've been coercing confessions for years. They're going to talk about it. CIA, CIA, enough said. They're going to talk about it. But the Secretary of State, the diplomatic arm of the United States of America, that portion of the executive branch of the federal government which is dedicated to solving problems short of warfare, there's something especially egregious. There's something particularly nauseating about the idea of this woman sitting there and saying things like, "We could waterboard him. Cool. You know, maybe I could whack him over the head with my new pair of pencil-heeled monoloblonics. Wouldn't that be something? They're sharp. They really are. I got one caught in a subway grate the other day, and I had to go and buy a new pair because the heel came off. Those people, the monoloblonic people, they're just wonderful. They gave me a discount. And it's not because I'm Secretary of State, and it's not because I threatened to waterboard them if they didn't. I just love them. Those and the Ferragamo people. You know, the folks at Ferragamo have actually used baseball bats on other customers when I walked in to get me to the counter. And again, it's not because I threatened to have them shot. Jesus. I mean, that's just a little bit of imagineering. But come on, how far off is that from the real, live, honest-to-God kind of sleazy rice? Condoleezza Rice goes great with Condoleezza Chicken. Sorry, hairball. Lord. This is the woman who couldn't wait to attack Iraq. And once we had attacked Iraq and occupied Iraq and started making brown people die in waves, and not even after that, before it, come on, remember, these meetings start in 2002, before the first shot had been fired at Iraq. They start talking about what they're going to do to the brown people to make them talk. And I suspect if we were to ever actually see a transcript of what went on in there, or hear a recording, there would be guffaws and giggles and chuckles. Maybe we can pull her toenails out. Ha, ha, ha! That'd be funny. And little Condi over there in the corner going, "Hey, everybody, you know what's worse than a Texas tornado?" You know what's worse than a Texas tornado. Come on, don't make me do the punchline, for God's sakes. But, you know, one, all of this happens, okay? This all happens. But that, for me, and I get the sense that it's the same way for the folks at CondeMustGo.com, that's not the gravamen. It's what she does. It is what she does in the Congress. Check out some of the audio.
I want to make very clear that that's the view and the policy of the administration, the policy of the president.
Now, what you're hearing happens in January 2005.
I want to make very clear that that's the view and the policy of the administration, the policy of the president, and that he's made very clear to American personnel that we will not condone torture.
December 2005.
The United States does not permit, tolerate, or condone torture under any circumstances.
Tonight, the results
April 2008.
Of a five-month investigation. Ever since the public learned about it, the program for using harsh interrogation techniques on terrorism suspects has been highly controversial.
That's torture, Charlie.
Nobody condones torture.
The discussions in the White House were top secret, and sources say involved some of the president's most senior and influential advisors.
Let me try to be clear. The United States doesn't and can't condone torture.
Right there is what you call perjury. Lying to Congress. Yeah.
The meetings were chaired by then-National Security Advisor Rice.
The discussions about the enhanced interrogation techniques were so detailed, sources said, the interrogations were almost choreographed, whether, for example, they would be slapped, pushed, deprived of sleep, or subjected to simulated drowning.
It was a torture program implemented by the United States of America and approved at the very highest level.
Torture and conspiracy to commit torture are crimes under U.S. law, wherever they may occur in the world.
The waterboarding is misnamed. It should not be called waterboarding. That's just the device that we use. It should be called the drowning torture, and has been called the drowning torture in the past.
I mean, these people are sitting around, regularly talking about something defined as a crime.
Under no circumstances should we or have we condoned torture.
In a meeting that summer, sources said Rice was decisive, telling the CIA, this is your baby, go do it.
The United States government does not authorize or condone torture of detainees. Acts of physical or mental torture are expressly prohibited.
I was in a lot of pain, and I was sort of counting the seconds, actually just counting 1 second, 2 seconds, just like that, really. Just hoping that it's going to be over soon, it's going to be over soon.
Oh dear, it would seem that we're off to rather a rough start tonight.
Psst, do something.
I'm liking more and more what Bob Greenwald is doing at Brave New Films. And of course, the partners are U.S. Action, True Majority, Democracy for America, and Brave New Films, doing tremendous work. Will you sign the petition? I'm a goner. I'm going to add my name to it. Here, listen. Okay. I've done it. That's how easy it was. I won't ask you to do anything that I won't do myself. Agnes is doing it too. Can you? CondeMustGo.com. And, you know, it would be interesting to I guess there's no way to track it, but, you know, we're talking about it at roughly, you know, between 6 and 6.30 Eastern Time on a Friday evening, the 18th of April. It would be interesting, would it not, if they had a sudden little surge in signings in this hour? or during these 3 hours? Be kind of cool, wouldn't it? That is the that's the influence that you, listeners to the horn, can exert. Agnes says, hi, Steady. Sorry, we interact with the chat room at the same time we're doing the program. We're just about the... only the horn does that. I don't hear anybody else doing that. Only the horn. It's a true interactive multimedia experience. It's an extravaganza. It's fabulous. I threw the fabulous in for Peter Godbolt. He's got a fabulous Just Us program coming your way here in about 2.5 hours. I hope you'll be on board for that. CondyMustGo.com. It would be really, really good, and I hope it doesn't result in a bunch of spam. I trust that it won't. These are good people. Democracy for America, True Majority, U.S. Action, and of course, Brave New Films. So, that's where we begin this evening. It's not everything. It's not, by any stretch of the imagination, everything. But it's a good starting point, isn't it? I think so. What else? What other things? Well, let's take a look. We'll be joined here in a few minutes, I'm assuming, by Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. In the interim, however, since we were terribly, terribly serious, it would probably be appropriate to have a bit of a giggle. And some of my favorite giggles are delivered courtesy of the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, over at FinnermanWorks.com. FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. Your RDA of irony. If you haven't signed up, why not? Because there's nobody doing better satire, and you know, and it's spiced with a lot of reality. Hello. Today's issue: the candidating game. The Pennsylvania debate between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton could have been a pilot for a Chuck Barris game show. I only wish that Charles Gibson and George Snuffleupagus, Stephanopoulos, had asked the questions that America really wants to know. 1. As President of the United States, what can you do to help Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan? 2. If Jesus returns, what position in your cabinet would you offer him? 3. Who is the 12th Cylon, and would you try to kill him or her on this very stage? 4. If you were producing a remake of Bonanza, whom would you cast as the Cartwrights? The 5th question that America truly wishes that Charlie Gibson and George Snuffleupagus would have asked the other night. Each of you take a sheet of paper, and in the next 2 minutes, write down all the James Bond films you can remember, and in your order of preference. 6. Why are Jews funny? And 7. Finally, would you prefer a tattoo or a body piercing of the American flag, and where on your anatomy would you want it? There are the questions that America needs answers to. Not senators, what are you going to do about the housing crisis? Not senators, what are you going to do about gasoline prices? Not senators, what are you going to do about Iraq? Not senators, what are you going to do about Afghanistan? Not senators, how do you feel about bombing the snot out of Iran since how Iran has never attacked another country? No, none of that. Not senators, what are you going to do about the fact that the Bush economic miracle is now hemorrhaging tens of thousands of jobs a month, and how are you going to stop it, and how are you going to bring the jobs back? None of that. Senator Obama, do you think your pastor loves America as much as you do? Oh! Jesus, what an embarrassment. Nonetheless, on the line with us now, all the way from what I presume to be sunny and shaken but not stirred Chicago, from MakeThemAccountable.com, our pal Carolyn Kay. Hey, Caro, how you doing?
Hey, doing well, thanks.
Did you feel the Tumblr?
Yes, I did. It was so strange. Well, I had felt the building kind of shake before, and I thought it was like the subway, which is very near, or a big truck or something, you know. But this morning, I was sitting in my chair, sitting at my computer, and I felt the chair go, whoa, 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 you know, and I said, this building is swaying. And I said, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe.
I've never been through one of these. How long did it last?
It was just a second or second and a half, you know, and so I didn't think much more about it until significant other got up and sat down at his machine. Well, he turns on the radio first, and then he said, "Did you hear that? We had an earthquake." And I said, "I felt it. I didn't know that was what it was, but I felt it. It was so strange."
No aftershocks?
No, just the one.
And you know what? Having the building sway is a whole lot better than having the building collapse.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
We've got a lot of listeners in the Chicago area, and I couldn't help thinking about each and every one of them when I saw that this was taking place.
Well, in
have they identified what fault was at fault?
There is a fault. The whole Mississippi River Valley is a fault.
The New Madrid Fault.
Yes, and they've been saying for years that it was overdue for a severe earthquake. This one was significant, although it didn't seem to have hit any place where it destroyed any buildings or anything like that, or hurt any people. But they've been saying that we were due for one.
Well, a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people understand the way the Richter scale is set up. It's sort of, I don't know if, is exponential the right word? But
yeah.
A 5 is twice as strong as a 4, and a 6 is twice as strong as a 5, and so forth,
yeah,
upward.
Right.
Were there any kind of reports of damage, broken, usually it's things like gas pipes rupturing that
I have not heard of any. So the epicenter must have been in a very rural area, and the places where it was the hardest must have been very, you know, small buildings that didn't seem to sustain any damage that I have heard of.
Well, thank heaven for small favors. I saw that earlier, and it just kind of gave me the creeps.
Yeah, sort of like the things that fall from the sky. You know, you hope they go into an ocean or something.
Yeah, right, and yeah, and don't have peanuts in them. No, never mind. God, that was just uncalled for. Well, how are you? I mean,
I'm doing well.
Good. I'm sorry about last Friday, but we've managed to survive 2 weeks, and no one has spontaneously combusted on the campaign trail yet. Although I haven't given up on that possibility. I think somebody's head's going to explode before this is all over. It may be mine.
Well, I think that. It's good to sit back every now and then and take a breath, because the things that I keep hearing, and I never was really, really involved in politics before 2000, but I don't remember any really, really bad stuff until 2000. I mean, I remember the Dukakis in the tank and the Willie Horton
Bernie Shaw question, and that back when Dukakis should have gone across the table and just clocked him. That could have solved a lot of problems in today if Dukakis would have just clocked Bernie Shaw. I don't think we'd have half the dumbass questions we have in these pageants that we do now.
I don't think we've had the same kind of stuff as that. The really unfair thing about the Willie Horton episode and the
you didn't think
the stuff that went on in South Carolina, for example, in 2000 against John McCain by Rove, things like that. We haven't had anything like that. So in that sense, I think
you don't think the Monica references have been a little bit beyond the pale.
Well, I would rather not have them, you know, but I don't think they're on the same scale as that, you know. And then, you know, there are some of the references to Senator Obama's past and things like that. Some of which, you know, some people say, oh, that kind of stuff doesn't matter. I'm personally of the opinion that your past associations do matter in the sense that it shows what kind of people that you pick, you know, to associate with. And, but to the extent that it's been played, maybe it's a little bit too much. But it's hard to know because you don't really know how far this stuff is going and how much it's hitting. You know, for instance, I've known about the William Ayers Association for over a year now, and it didn't seem to get any traction, and nobody seems to. In fact, I know somebody who went to high school with Bill Ayers, you know, and you just don't know when these sorts of things are going to hit. Oh, and Reverend White, that was nothing new. That had been reported a little bit, you know, a couple of times, and then all of a sudden it ABC reported.
Yeah, see, I don't hold pastors in particularly high esteem, so when one of them says something crazy like, the Catholic Church is a false cult, like Hagee said, or a woman who chooses what happens on her insides is practicing eugenics, like Rod Parsley said, you know, I just go, hey, you know, they're preachers. Crazy crap is their business.
Well, there are a lot of them that, well, in you know, I would include the Pope in that list.
Well, then there's him. My God, did you hear the sound bite from, oh my God, Caro. I checked as best I could to make sure it was real, and I think it is. What George Bush said to the Pope when the Pope was done giving his address at the big birthday party we threw for him on the lawn of the White House. Did you hear this?
No, tell me.
Okay, well, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to play it. Because I don't want you to have to say that crazy Bob Kincaid told me. I want you to say, I heard.
Okay.
Let's see. What the heck did it? Oh, here it is. Okay, I hope the audio is good enough for it to come through. Okay, so just for the setup, you know, everybody's yay, cheering, yay, Pope, yay, Pope. And they're cheering on the south lawn of the White House. He's done with his remarks, and George gets up to speak to him. And, of course, you know how it is with George and open mics.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Extemporaneously?
Yeah. Well, you know, perhaps this is the true meaning of speaking ex cathedra. listen to the congratulation that he gives the leader of the Catholic Church in the world.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Holiness. Awesome speech.
Thank you, Your Holiness. Awesome speech. Dude!
That's our president.
That's our Bush. You know, I mean, but at first you laugh and then you go, holy crap. Awesome speech.
Awesome speech.
Hey, you want to play some hacky sack? You know, I don't know. Maybe you couldn't play any hacky sack there, Popey Pope. But, you know, like, because like with the long dress you're wearing and stuff. But if you ever put on pants, I'm a killer hacky sack player, dude. Awesome speech. And it's got to get better, Caro. It's got to get better.
Well, the thing to remember is that you know, it's politics. It's people trying to get an advantage over the other. You know, I don't know when we got so pickety and persnickety that we said, oh, no, you cannot say this about this candidate, or you cannot say that about this candidate. Now, I'm against saying demeaning things that demean candidates. Like on one of the message groups that I belong to, one of the things that got me so fired up about supporting Hillary Clinton was that one of the members of that group refused to call her Hillary Clinton, or even Hillary by her first name, which is very familiar, but it's kind of a thing that she promotes to differentiate herself from Bill, the other Clinton, you know. And he wouldn't call her Hillary. He wouldn't call her Hillary Clinton. He wouldn't call her Senator Clinton. He would only call her President Clinton's wife, which is a way of demeaning her and diminishing the White House experience that she did have, which, you know, Obama's advisor, David Axelrod, realized from the beginning was a big strong point that she had over him. And therefore, and he was a student of Karl Rove, you know, and so he said, okay, that's her strong point, that's what I have to go after. And unfortunately, a lot of the supporters took that as, okay, well, let's demean the old bat, you know. And I took that kind of personally.
See, I've never, in the course of doing this show, I've never had a problem. She is Senator Clinton, and he is Senator Obama.
Yes.
He's not Senator Osama Obama.
Yeah.
And she is not, and she is not Senator Blue Vince Foster's brains out, and we know it because Dan Burton shot a watermelon with a 9mm pistol in Indiana.
Oh, they only haven't gotten there yet.
Well, no, that's the good stuff. That comes later.
Up of Monica Lewinsky is equally unfair. I mean, what does she have to do with that except for the fact that she stood by her man, which is
everybody says is
an admirable thing, except when it's Hillary Clinton, then it's bad.
It's all code, Caro. To the same extent that when we say that Barack was bitter or elitist, what we're saying, that's all code for the Southern redneck vote, and we're telling them that he's uppity. Okay. Now, what we're saying about Senator Clinton when we say the kind of things that you've described there is especially like the Monica stuff. The only reason to bring up the Monica stuff is if you are trying to plant a seed in the mind of the audience that she somehow condoned it.
Or either that, or it just in the case of the media, the salaciousness value of it, you know, to help sell newspapers, glue eyeballs to the TV set. You know, whatever it may be, because if there's sex involved,
I really think what the media, you know, by bringing it up, what they're trying to do is, you know, get those bitter religion gun clinging people to say, well, I throwed my husband out when I caught her with the huzzy down to the laundromat. She should have done the same thing with that horn dog she was married to.
Well, of course, what they were trying to push there. Now, this was the right wing, and of course, you know, so many people say, "Oh, Hillary uses light right wing stuff against Obama." Well, people have been using right wing stuff against Clinton, you know, and
all it was from 1991 forward.
Exactly.
I mean, I was there.
And a lot of that's been resurrected as a way to prove that she's so divisive, you know. And the thing that they're trying to prove with bringing up Lewinsky is that she only stayed with Bill because she wanted power. How do people know that? You know, these mind readers.
What do they see? I don't get this. This isn't the British monarchy where a divorce is an actual problem. This is a country where lots of people are divorced. If she was divorced, I mean, do you honestly think that she wouldn't be able to run for president if she had divorced Bill?
Well, it wouldn't matter what she did because she, I guess, really is the first woman politician to ever have been come this far in the United States. Okay, and at first I think what the right wing was trying to do to her in the 90s was to vilify her in the same way that they were vilifying Clinton, okay, Bill Clinton, because he stole the election, you see, in 92. You need that, right?
I'll be damned. No, that's news.
See, H.W. Bush was supposed to be elected again, and it was Bill Clinton's fault that
he got together with Ross Perot and the Martian. And the Martians. Don't forget Ross's Martians. But yeah.
Decided to run and take 20% of the vote, much of which came from the Republicans.
Yeah.
You know. And so it was because of that, so he was an illegitimate president to begin with, okay, and they had to show that Democrats are bad, mean, vicious, evil, sexual, perverted,
I know,
and bad people to have in the White House. So from the beginning, and then the Washington elite were perfectly willing to go along with this because these were, you know, barefooted people that used an outhouse and didn't know what indoor plumbing was and stuff like that. That's how snooty they were about the Clintons. And so everything just escalated from there. And interestingly enough, Richard Mellon Scaife was one of the perpetrators of a lot of that. He spent millions.
The Arkansas Project. David Brock worked for him. Sure.
Digging up trash against Bill Clinton and, you know.
That was the whole scene. Yeah, that was the whole scene that Carville described as dragging $100 bills through trailer parks.
what you got with that was Jennifer Flowers and Paula Jones.
Right. Yeah.
So,
trolling for trollops. How's that? Oh, sorry. My bad.
There you go. But the purpose there was to turn people against the Democrats. And, you know, of course, the Bill Clinton managed to help them out a little bit when it came to, you know, his sexual needs or proclivities or whatever you might want to call them.
Yeah, what we call in the hills is peccadillos.
Peccadillos. That's good.
I can't believe I just said that.
That's a very, very good one. I'm going to have to use that.
It's all yours. Wear it out. I watched that video of the woman in the horse blanket sweater asking Senator Obama, she forgot a syllable, Senator Obama, why won't you wear no flag lapel pin? Why won't you? And I've seen the video several times, and it still doesn't make me not want to put my shoe through a window. And I can't, honest to God, I can't believe, because I know that both of these candidates are very capable of addressing the real problems that America is facing. It seemed the other night with this pageant, Caro, tell me if I'm wrong, that the purpose of the media was to keep Bush's failures from being, you know, held up in front of the face of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that a rational interpretation?
Yes.
I mean, oh my God, I couldn't believe, you know. And I was told last night that the thing ended a little bit peremptorily because the audience was getting pissed by about the end of hour number two.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was almost a big stink.
From Charles Gibson to the control room were they're turning on me.
Lord God, what are they doing with that bag of feathers? And where's that? What's that boiling tar going to be used for? But seriously, with regard to the candidates, but with regard to the media. What does it take for us to get through to them that we actually are intelligent enough as an electorate to want to hear substantive discussions of meaningful issues? You know, as you came on, I was sharing that wonderful piece from your fellow Chicagoan, Eugene Finnerman, about the questions that America really wanted answered.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got such a sharp, sharp wit for this kind of thing. You know, questions like, what can you do to help Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan? If Jesus returns, what cabinet position will you give him? Who's the 12th Cylon?
Oh, no. Jesus. Did you ever see the cartoons of Mo Paul?
Oh, yes.
You remember, he's not doing any anymore, but for a long time there, he was one of my saving graces. But one of the ones he did... was Karl Rove sitting at a desk with his little computer talking on a phone while, you know, like working on the keyboard, and he says, "Jesus Christ, huh? Get me some dirt on this guy."
Oh, yeah, I remember Al Franken's supply side Jesus, and yeah, exactly. But you know, we've at this point in time, and I don't know how much play it's getting. I'm sure you've seen it. ABC has been busted for taking scripted questions from Sean Hannity.
Well, not exactly. That isn't exactly what happened. I believe that George Stephanopoulos was a guest on Hannity's radio show.
Yes.
And Hannity was saying, because the Democrats would not do a debate on Fox, remember? And so Hannity never got the chance to ask questions himself. Now, he's been pushing this Ayers story for a long time. And, you know, this the fact that Obama was a friend with this, you know, 1960s radical.
Yeah. He's pushing and it keeps not sticking. Yeah.
Pardon?
He's pushing, but it keeps not sticking.
Yeah, yeah. It hasn't been going anywhere. And so he just mentioned that to Stephanopoulos. He says, why don't you ask him about this? Ask him about Bill Ayers. And
and so, George Snuffleupagus said, I'm writing it down now.
Yeah.
And now Hannity's on the air.
I mean, they get questions from the Oppo research of the other side. I mean, they've always done that.
But isn't there a journalistic line, Caro? You know, when you're taking your opposition research from another television network, isn't something I know journalistic ethics would probably it's probably an anachronism. But isn't there something compromised about that?
Well, you know, I wish they would talk about issues and talk about what's important. They both had given addresses to the national group of newspaper editors.
Yeah.
Earlier in the week, and it would have been very enlightening to have them give synopses of what they had told those editors, because I didn't read the Obama one all the way through, but I did read the Clinton one, and there was some really important things in there, you know, like what they would do. I think they had been, you know, given an outline saying, these are the things that we want to know. What will you do in your first 100 days? What will you do this and that? And those are very important things for Americans to know about.
Yes.
But there was very little of that. They were going on the Timmy Russert model.
Timmy.
Which is gotcha. You know, the gotcha stuff.
Well, it's pathetic,
you know,
and it's frustrating.
That's what we've come to. That, you know.
Because I got to tell you, Caro, you know, I have never, not for one minute of my life, been afraid of a terrorist. I have never been
terrorism. Me either.
Yeah, I have never for an instant.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, I don't walk around wondering when Jesus is coming and whether or not I'm, you know, all I know is I'm going to get a good car out of it. Because
I live within a mile of the Sears Tower. I can see it from my window, you know. And
right, and you don't walk around thinking about it, but you are
thinking about
$5 a gallon gas, and you are thinking about the housing crisis, and you are thinking about jobs. This stuff has gotten, I mean, I hate to say it, but I'm getting a little bit unnerved, Caro, about where we're going.
Well,
and I'd like
to admit, I have to admit that I'm not so as concerned. I don't see the gas pricing on a daily basis like some other people do, because I don't own a car.
Well, okay, so it's not on your front burner.
Crazy as that may be. But it is, of course, a part of the increase in prices that we've been seeing over the last year especially. And yeah, it's getting kind of scary when your income ain't going up, but prices are.
Right, you know, and that's milk, and that's eggs, and that's the incredible, you know, is there anything bulkier than the food that it takes to keep humans going, and that's all got to be, you know, our distribution system's been so corporatized that it's all got to be trucked across the country. That's got to be nerve wracking. Hey,
I used to be in that business, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was the systems director for a food service distribution facility that had been bought out by a large company, and I helped work on the conversion to a master system, big system. But
so you've probably got more insight into that than most of us do.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting thing how that gets done, and how you know what to have on hand and what to.
Look, I'm baffled by railroad timetables or airline schedules. So
you know, I had never thought about those kinds of things until I don't know if I've told you this, Bob, but I went to Vietnam for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for the USO there. And I had never thought about, we ran facilities like a service club for, you know,
right.
in Vietnam. And I had never thought, we had a snack bar and we had, you know, rooms where they could write home on stationery, you know, and things like that. It was before the internet and everything, of course. And games areas for pool and ping pong and so on. And before that, I had never thought about how things get from one place to another, you know. But my first R&R, we got R&Rs every 3 months, so I was able to do some traveling in the Far East. The first one, I got on an airplane, picked up a fork, and they actually had metal forks on airplanes in those days. And
don't date yourself.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I looked at that fork, I said, how did this fork get on this airplane? You know, and I was thinking, for, all the way from the mining of the ore, all the
yes.
way through that fork arriving on my little, you know, desk there.
Yeah, metal forks don't come from linens and things.
No, but the whole process of mining the ore, making the thing, buying it, delivering it,
the stamping plant, yeah, sure,
yeah, having it, you know, arrive on that airplane because they knew they were going to have so many passengers they were going to have to feed them, you know, all of the logistics that goes into all of that. That's when I first started thinking about that kind of stuff and sort of getting interested and. So it's quite an intricate process.
Oh, it is indeed.
Lots of mistakes can be made along the way.
I tell you what, let's take a call real quick if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
Okay, let's see. I hope the person. Okay, I've got the wrong button. Ah, doggone it. Okay. All right. So we won't. They'll probably call back in a minute. Now it's interesting you had mentioned that whole thing because I remember. I don't. You remember the great. Oh, it was Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton, a movie called Beckett.
Oh,
the screen, the screenplay by Jean Anouilh, and
Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, concerning Henry II and Thomas
yes,
Becket.
Yes.
And there's a wonderful scene, and you mentioning forks just it brought it to the forefront of my mind, where Becket, who is the urbane sophisticate to the rather barbaric Henry. Introduces forks that he has just brought from Italy.
Yes.
And
before that, they just ate with their hands.
Yeah, and he holds the fork up to Henry, and Henry is utterly baffled by it. And he says, "Sire, it is for pronging the meat." And Henry says to Becket, "Dear Lord, I can't wait to introduce this at my table. My barons will be stabbing each other over dinner." but we don't think about that kind of thing, and yet those are fairly fragile systems, aren't they, Karen?
Yeah, yeah. I have to say though, my favorite line from that movie is, "Will no one rid me of this? What was it, this
meddlesome priest?
Meddlesome priest."
You don't know how many times.
I use that line too, like whenever somebody gets the axe for, you know, one thing or another.
And oddly enough, you know, with the awesome speech you're holding, with that, I suddenly had in my mind, you know, this German accent going, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome president?"
Oh, I wish somebody would. I mean, but not in the way, not in that way.
Peacefully and legally. That's for Agent Fred down in the third sub-basement of the National Security Administration, peacefully and legally.
Please be aware.
But, I mean, I go through your digest every day and get tons of stuff out of it every day.
Well, good.
And you continue to do just amazing work. And the stuff, where do you find this stuff? I mean, does it just... you know, you've got a nice Media Matters section. That explains itself.
Yeah. Of course, I go to their website and just pick their headlines for the day. A lot of the other stuff, I have an RSS reader. I use Google.
Yeah, something that I haven't doped out yet.
Yeah,
still kind of behind the times.
Use the Google one because it's the easiest one, I think, to set up, or it certainly was for me. you can set it up on your, make Google your home page, and then you can easily set up an RSS feed there. And just add blogs. I have McClatchy in there.
Don't they do wonderful work?
Yes, they do. They really do. They
is this
have,
what now? McClatchy is what used to be Knight Ritter, right?
Yes.
Okay. The mergers confuse me sometimes.
And even when they were Knight Ritter, they were great. They were the few who were questioning the Iraq War. That was when I first started to really notice them. And a lot of the people, stayed on when Knight Ritter was bought by McClatchy, and they have done superb work, just superb. They are what the media are supposed to be. They are the ones that question authority, not go to the tea parties with authority and, make nice and try not to hurt anybody's feelings.
The booze and shrimp dinners. I love shrimp, but I've never understood why somebody who decided to go into the journalism racket would sell out his profession or hers for access to chilled shrimp. But that really is kind of what it boils down to, isn't it? Pui Fusse, oh dear God.
Well, as a matter of fact, Marcos Melitzis made a similar comment when he first started getting invited to things like that. It was at the first Daily Coast convention or Yearly Coast convention, which now has a new name. It's Netroots or something.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, too, because they needed to separate themselves from Marcos. Some lobbyists had some parties at the first Yearly Coast convention. And, so somebody was questioning that. Somebody, one of the national news media had Marcos on and was questioning him about that. He said, well, we deserve that shrimp fratiavolo too. Lobbyist money is lobbyist money, Marcos. I mean, it's the same wherever it's spent.
Well, and that's the thing. These people will buy. I mean, look. We're entering the realm of complete and utter fantasy land here, Caro. Someday the horn will be big enough that somebody will come to us and say, I got a big bag of money here. All you got to do is say the right thing. And, it's going to be hell. It is really going to be hell to tell that big bag of money to take a walk.
Well, it's hard. It really is because, it's. I honestly think, and I have thought for a long time, that the whole reason for the success of the right wing for as long as it was successful, they're kind of falling apart right now, but that whole monolithic thing that they built, and still have, in a very big sense on the media side, it's all because of money. And I figured this out way early on. I started my website in 2000 and, kept, how's this happening? How are they doing this? How are they doing this? And finally, after some research, I've found out that what they have done since, a memo written by Lewis Powell in 1971, they have basically had a program of building an infrastructure to promote not really conservative ideas, but right-wing ideas.
Yeah, not Eisenhower Republican ideas.
No, Eisenhower is a liberal to these people.
No, yeah, right. But more along the lines of the crazy people in, say,
the people that are only interested in power, like Tom DeLay, and
the people that created the K Street Project and the Project for a New American Century, and
exactly. It's all about power.
I saw one story in your digest, Caro, that I haven't heard a lot talked about. I'm not necessarily a member of the Jack Cafferty fan club, what do you think the odds are in light of everybody having to apologize to everybody else for everything? What do you think the odds are that CNN will strong arm an apology out of Jack Cafferty? Have they yet?
Well, I don't think they have, but you mean for his remarks about China?
Yeah, I think they're basically the same bunch of goons and thugs we've been they've been for the last 50 years.
Which, I don't know. I don't know if they are or not. I am not an expert on China by any means.
What do I have to say, Caro, to get somebody out there to want me to apologize so I can tell them to stuff it and get all over the Internet?
Well, here's the thing about whether or not Cafferty will apologize. If the Chinese government decides to keep CNN out of the country because of the Olympics, okay, or around the time of the Olympics, unless Cafferty apologizes, Cafferty will apologize. Okay, I mean, that's the kind of power that they can have, and I was getting back to the right wing media power structure. They can buy people. How else on earth could there be so many people telling obvious lies, telling Baghdad Bob kind of lies? You know, I mean, there are the bombs going off behind you, and you're saying, no, the Americans, they are not in Iraq. They have not come to Iraq. They are not in Iraq. We are winning.
Yep. Those are a victory celebration for our glorious independence. Yes. Wow, how did Baghdad Bob suddenly turn into a Russian? I got to get control of these accents.
It's my bad accent. That's the problem. But how could these people continue to say these ridiculous things if they weren't funded? You know, I mean, how can so many crazy people have a platform and so many sane people not have a platform? That's the part.
And I guess this goes back to an earlier question, Caro. Does that mean that the real answer to how you deal with the Tim Russerts and the George Snuffleupaguses and that whole crowd is to just turn the damn thing off? How many people would have to do that before it
absolutely.
Became... from a systems analyst the viewpoint and the kind of stuff that you've done in the past, how many people would have to do that before it became statistically relevant to, say, Nielsen and Arbitron?
Oh, you know, I really don't know, but it would be a good question to pursue. It certainly would be a good thing to do some research on because, you know, they do have certain multipliers that they use when they... you know, one letter represents the feelings of 1,000 people or something like that because only 1 out of 1,000 will actually sit down and write the letter. Things are a bit different now with email and the prevalence of phone calls.
Yes, email and the general decline in American literacy. I think there's a link. But it would
Does
be kind of fascinating
in this
to see.
Country know how to spell the word lose?
Oh.
I always see it spelled L-O-O-S-E.
Well, you know, and that's one of them. This is really just not. This is, I guess, fluff, but it's fun to ponder. One of the things that the internet has done a brilliant job of is point out the world's most prevalent typographical errors.
Yeah. Well, I don't think these are typos. I think they are people who don't who are spelling deficient. I think they don't know that lose is L-O-S-E and loose is L-O-O-S-E.
Well, then there's T-H-E-I-R, T-H-E-R-E, and T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E. And because I guess I've got a little strain of obsessive compulsive disorder because
I have this English teacher inside me.
Because there's there's some of this stuff that I see. It's and it's drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And it's always seemed fairly simple for me, but you know maybe not others. But you know when you see OMG 1111111111, where somebody was so wrought and excited that they couldn't be bothered to press down the shift key to get the exclamation point.
Exclamation points, right?
Which, by the way, there's another one that drives me nuts. Which, you know, in order to get the explanation point. But I get what you're saying that, you know, with the rise of this kind of communications. But when you've got emails with those kind of flaws in them that you and I have just mentioned, our elite bettors, when they see one of those, just that gives them an excuse to go, oh, moron, never mind, and ignore it. But I wish I knew somebody in the math racket or something that I could, you know, what would it take? What would it take to become statistically relevant? Because, you know, if you give people in the liberal side of things, the progressive, the Democrat, the decent human being side of things, a stated goal, we'll bust our humps to reach it.
Yeah, and in fact, there are organizations that probably would help. One of the main purposes of Media Matters and FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, both have these action alerts, and they ask people to call and complain about one thing or another, or to praise in very few cases. The other kinds of actions that have been taken are boycotts against sponsors. Have you ever talked to Spocko?
I've never talked to Spocko, but we've talked a lot about Spocko.
Okay, well, he started some boycotting of advertisers of a San Francisco station, and just recently they let one of the most hateful right wingers go. And not that her ratings were still okay, God only knows why, but the problem was that advertisers were dropping her. So she found
herself without a job. She didn't get renewed, Melanie Morgan.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that we want. We want those people not to be renewed, the ones that pass on the lies and get paid for passing on the lies, and then, to have promotion events for folks like Bob Kincaid, for example, and other good people that want to bring reason and light and understanding to the world, which is just as entertaining, or certainly is for me. I don't want to listen to the wah, wah, wah kind of stuff, I want to listen to people that say, hey, look at this. This is really, really interesting. Look at what's going on here. And look at how we could do this and how we could do that. But the other possibility, there's the contacting management with pluses and minuses. There's contacting advertisers. And again, you can go both ways. You can say, look at what these people are saying. Do you want your product associated with this kind of horrible stuff? Or saying, thank you so much for sponsoring this radio show. It's something that I really, really like and depend on, and I buy your product because of your sponsorship of this. So, and then the other thing was something that was done against Sinclair Broadcasting. Remember when they were going to present this very unfair film about 9/11.
Oh, right, yeah.
Blamed Bill Clinton and his advisors for 9/11. It was, totally and completely untrue. there were a lot of people who knew the levers to push, and they went after the investors. They went to the Sinclair investors and said, This is bad stuff here. Don't be doing this. And their stock tanked. And there are levers. There are ways we can get at them. And there are organizations working on this. MoveOn has a whole section that is supposedly working with Media Matters to do these kinds of contacts when there's really egregious stuff going on. There's an organization called Free Press.
Oh, I'm well familiar with those guys, yeah.
Okay.
They've been on the show.
Okay. You know Bob McChesney?
Right.
Okay. And he's down at University of Illinois, by the way.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't realize
Champaign-Urbana. And I've met him.
Go Illini.
Yeah. And there are ways to do it, but I don't know when we reach the critical mass. That's the part I don't know, that finally they start to pay attention. One of the suggestions that I think was in yesterday's newsletter, or maybe today's, somebody from the Columbia Journalism Review said...
not associated with CBS.
Yeah, right. It's a Columbia University.
No, I just remember the old Columbia School of Broadcasting ads. I'm sorry.
Okay. And this person said, if they replace Katie Couric, you know, like they're talking about doing, like she's not bringing in the ratings or whatever, they replace Katie Couric, why don't pay the next guy $15 million a year? Think of all of the producers and investigators and writers and whatever that you could hire for $15 million
for
a year.
For me, the question is, and you know, New York's not a cheap city to live in, and you got to live in New York to do the CBS Evening News. How much does it cost to live in a really nice apartment on the on Central Park West?
Not $15 million.
Not $15 million a year. but you know. That's it. These economies of scale with the media just drive me crazy. The story I'm sure you saw out there, Caro, of Chris Matthews's $4.5 million hideaway retreat vacation home on Nantucket.
Uh huh.
Just,
well, he makes $5 million
between,
a year, so
yeah,
he's,
yeah, just
he's
between,
a pauper compared to.
But just between you and me, because you know it's just us talking here. What the hell does Chris Matthews do that's worth $5 million a year? Screw that. What does Chris Matthews do that's worth $500,000 a year?
Well, I'm with you. I think the guy's a travesty. I think it's a huge mistake. But as you know, the big write-up in the New York Magazine was it recently about him, page after page after page of stuff about him, and so. You know, one of the people that I read said, obviously misogyny pays. I mean, that was out of Salon magazine. This is okay. I mean, this is what this guy does. I mean, he says mean, vicious, nasty things about Democrats, but particularly about Hillary Clinton.
You know, what's Tim bring down?
Tim A. I don't get it. I don't get what any of these people do. There are 35,000 people that could take the place of any of those people out there. But
hey, you know what would be another fun comparison? And I bet this would be discoverable. What is the greatest amount of money that Edward R. Murrow ever made in his career at CBS?
Oh, I bet it was, you know.
And I mean, you know, factor in inflation and make them real-time dollars.
I bet it was like $30,000-$40,000 a year in those days, which would make it, you know, maybe $300,000-$400,000 a year now. So I mean, it wasn't the million. I mean, it wasn't the equivalent of the millions that these people are getting now.
And let's
but here's what's happening. This is the interesting thing about what's happening with the internet. It's not just the news media, it's the entertainment media and publishing houses and so on, that you know, I'm getting this inkling that they are basically pricing themselves out of the market. The only kinds of things they want to do are the big blockbuster type thing, blockbuster movies that make many millions of dollars and blah 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 and whatever.
And with all due respect, Harry Potter books in the publishing world, and
yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. They no longer evaluate books on whether it's important for this information to be brought to the world.
I ask myself
whether or not it'll be a blockbuster.
A lot of times I ask myself, you know, could Under the Volcano get published today?
Uh-huh.
Could one of my favorite films, could Blazing Saddles be released in theaters today?
Would it be made?
Would it even be made?
You know,
right, exactly.
They wouldn't put the money into it.
And to be fair,
here's what's happening underneath all of that. Underneath all of that, there's this fervent creative activity going on, making smaller films, certainly smaller budget films, smaller media outlets, smaller book publishing, self-publishing, web publishing type things. So there's this whole world of feverish samizdat type stuff going on that's completely bypassing and completely undermining that whole structure. And that's what has them all so scared, because they know their $15 million a year salaries
are in
danger.
And in a way, isn't that why the bukus of bucks find their way into the uh, sh- uh, the onto the shrimp fra Diablo budget of the big bloggers?
Oh, of course.
I mean, doesn't this all sort of weave back in and out and eventually come together at the end of the pigtail?
Yes, because it in a certain way, it's all about power. Yes.
This stuff just fascinates me. And to be fair, we've mentioned Chris Matthews, we've mentioned Timmy, we've mentioned Katie Couric. This also applies to Judas Snuffleupagus and Charlie Gibson, and it also applies again. To be fair, it applies to Keith Olbermann. I don't know how much he's bringing down, but I'm guessing he's probably bringing down more than he's worth.
Yes.
And that worth thing is a purely subjective standard as established by me. It's like that old bumper sticker. Everything will get so much, it would be a lot simpler as soon as you people realize I'm God. I look at, there are so many examples, Caro. I look back, for instance, at the early days of baseball, when professional baseball players were nothing more. It was barely.
They played it for the love of the sport.
They played it for the love of the sport, but they were also kept by things like the reserve clause. They were kept in a form of almost indentured servitude.
Yes.
And they did have a right to make better money for what they were doing as compared to the rake in that the owners were getting. And I can see the talent and the people who are behind putting the programs together. I can see them saying, why should we labor for low money when, say, Rupert Murdoch is making a king's ransom out of all of this?
Oh, yeah.
I get all of that. But by the same token, isn't there a little bit of Adam Smith capitalism here? What if...
You could say the same thing about... you could say about athletes. You could say the same thing about recording artists. You could say the same thing about movie stars and so on. I mean, is a movie star really worth $25 million?
As compared to somebody who cures maybe polio or HIV? Hell no.
Of course, those guys we have to pay $10,000 a year.
Yeah, look, the guy who flies me from Charleston to D.C. Makes about the same money as a Taco Bell manager.
Oh, man.
I mean, this country's upside down. But if you think it, but if you think not in terms of, the owners versus the people behind the camera or whatever, this is all about the shareholders, isn't it? If you stopped paying these ridiculous salaries, wouldn't the shareholder dividend go through the roof?
If they didn't have to pay the artists as much?
Well, I hate to say artists because
I put
writers and sculptors and singers and actors and stuff in a different category.
Okay.
But if they didn't have to pay Chris, what would happen to the NBC portion of the GE bottom line if they weren't paying so damn much money to Chris Matthews and Timmy? And
well,
Brian
again,
Williams.
It would depend on what they decided to do with the money. If they decided to hire more people, that would be a good thing for the quality of their product. But if it all went to the bottom line, then that would be, big boost for the stockholders.
Yeah.
Of course, we're talking gigantic amounts of money there. You have to really talk a lot of money before you start to affect.
Well, and when we're talking about the GE budget, NBC's a drop in the bucket compared to the Bombs for Brown People portion of the GE budget.
or the electricity by lighting up the entire world with the radiation.
Sure, exactly. Hey, Caro, I tell you what, we've been all over the board tonight, but boy, it sure has been fun.
It has been fun.
And, I'm glad that the New Madrid Fault just burped once and appears to be behaving itself. It was pointed out in the chat room, though, that today is the 102nd anniversary of the San Francisco quake.
Really?
Which kind of blew me away.
Something there.
Yep. Take care, Caro. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ah, darn, that was fun. But what I'm trying to get across here, and I'm not an economist, and I damn sure don't play one on the radio. What I'm trying to get across here is that there are other ways of thinking about these things. There are other ways of... I hate that tired old phrase about, you got to think outside the box. What box? I understand the meaning of it, but it becomes so worn out that it loses anything approaching rational meaning. But with that in mind, when we talk about gas prices, when we talk about the subprime crisis, when we talk about the housing bubble bursting, is it just me, or in the work that you guys do to think about these kinds of things, do you notice that everybody seems to come back to the same answers time after time after time after time after time? Because that's what I keep seeing. Same old tired answers. Okay, case in point. Let me see if I can get it here so I'm speaking somewhat cogently about it. Case in point, the problem. And when I say the problem, I'm using a sort of shorthand. When I say the problem, I mean John McCain. Now, the world is, you know, it's one of those where am I, where are we going, and why am I in this handbasket kind of situations. But just take this as a case in point. Here is tired, worn out, wasn't very bright to begin with John McCain, who has as his one of his economic advisors, former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina. I did not say Carly Purina. I said Carly Fiorina. And she's a BSD on the John McCain economic team. So she shows up on Bingo Billy Bennett's radio program. Remember him, Bill Bennett? You know, abort all the black babies and you'll end the crime problem, that Bill Bennett. Yeah, so he gets a radio show. Woo! Woof! And he's asking, Bennett asks Carly Fiorina about any particular suggestions, his words, that McCain is making to change Medicare and Social Security. And, you know, whenever a Republican starts talking about changing Medicare and Social Security, it's one of those, you know, today I will read to you from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Duck! Well, check this out. This is what I mean about, you know, same old tired crap.
And so he talked about taking on, finally, the reform of Medicare and Social Security. He talked about reforming unemployment insurance so that workers are not just paid while they're unemployed, but prepared while they're unemployed.
Time out. You know, one of these days when we're doing video and I've got the huge wardrobe and stuff and I'm, you know, making that Katie Couric money, I'm gonna have suits with those Pat Riley collared. You remember Pat Riley, NBA coach, so that I can jump up in my Armani suit and hit the tee, you know, with a timeout. He wants to reform unemployment compensation. Ooh. Oh, this one's gonna sting. Oh, it's gonna smart. You'll notice he's going to reform John McCain as the McCain-dedate, the McCain-Turian candidate, John McSame, John McBush, son of George. That's son of a Bush. What is it? How does he want to reform unemployment compensation? Wait a minute.
And so he talked about taking on, finally, the reform of Medicare and Social Security. He talked about reforming unemployment insurance so that workers are not just paid while they're unemployed, but prepared while they're unemployed.
That's right. No more free rides for you unemployed people. You get laid off and you just think it's all frisbees and wheat checks, don't you? gonna lay up on your asses and collect that gravy. Never mind the fact that it's one-tenth of what you were collecting when you were getting paid in the first place. It's just free money, and you're gonna lay around till the unemployment runs out. Well, by God, John McCain's gonna make you work. You can get out there and pick up trash on the roadside, or you can chop cotton, you lazy bums. Gonna reform unemployment compensation. You know, when a Republican uses the word reform, you need, but you already know this, that means look for a soft place to land, you working stiffs, you.
To seek the next job. He talked about changing the mindset in Washington.
You know what? When your job has been outsourced to China, and John McBush, McSame, McCain candidate, McCain-Churian candidate, when he wants to prepare you for the next job, and your job just went to China, does that mean you're going to get a Rosetta Stone of Speak Mandarin in 7 days in the mail? God! Same old tired crap. It's the unemployed people's fault that they're unemployed. It has nothing to do with the Wall Street wheeler dealer roulette player who's still making 150 gumpty bajillion dollars a year for running his company into the ground. No, he gets a little bit of Bush administration welfare bailout money from the Federal Reserve somewhere between Friday night and Monday morning. But that lazy so-and-so trying to collect that unemployment insurance. Hey, here's a reform for you, John. How's about we make unemployment insurance permanent? How's about if you can prove that you've got skills and that you're a good worker and that you've tried real damn hard? How's about we just keep cutting a check until the job comes home from Kuala Lumpur? How's about that, John? Because that doesn't seem so darn crazy to me. How about a stipend of, say, a year's salary if you live in Pennsylvania and your job goes to Texas? How about some unemployment compensation reform in the form of helping somebody, you know, get that job in Texas? But that's just, you know, we can't think about that because that might actually help a working American. And God knows helping a working American is the last damn thing on the mind of any godforsaken, soulless, motherless, godless repig-licking. Especially the likes of Maverick John McCain. Lord, I loathe him. Let's go to the phones. We'll get back to the audio later. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
I was wondering, you know, I have to ask a question. I'm not certain, but was that a donut dolly?
Pardon?
You don't know what a donut dolly was.
No, I didn't hear the words. I'm sorry. Oh. Your connection's a little dodgy.
Oh, okay. Let me grab a landline. I'm on an airline. Okay.
Okay. Da, 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 da.
I'm still here. But
okay, there you are.
Hang up on the other line. Okay.
Okay.
Are you there, Bob?
Yeah, that's a lot better.
My bad. Was that a donut dolly, Carol?
I don't know. Because okay, now I understand, and no, I don't know the meaning of the phrase. Sorry.
Yeah. No, but, okay, please, I was a grunt in,
Okay, I got it, yeah, she was with the USO.
Okay, she was, okay.
Don't I'm a little Osley on the uptake, eh?
Ah, a little bit slow, but hey, think about it, Bob. She's kind of a rich, very wealthy woman sitting in Chicago.
No, not at all. There's nothing rich about Caro Kay.
Oh, but she was a donut ballot, but she was burying out, you know, what do you say, you know, had a some things from the country, out of the country, for, and then she was just landing in places and putting down profits for the Republican Party. Oh, yeah, under Nixon or Johnson, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Bob.
Okay, well, I got the impression that she was doing, like, systems analysis and making sure that stuff went from point A to point B. But that,
well, that's very good, but she was not in country to do...
No. Nor did she make that claim, Bob.
I know that, but the thing is, Bob, it's you know, like, okay, your father, Ken.
Yeah.
Was he in World War II? As a sailor, and did he sail upon the seas?
Sure he did. But you know what? When they made landfall and they came into port, they were awfully glad to see that there was a little bit of support structure there for them.
Good for them. But Bob, what I heard this evening was not what we're going through right now. It's not what's going down here.
No. Right. Look, now. I mean, I make a conscious effort to try to yuck it up a little bit on Friday because Monday through Thursday is enough to send me into a warm bath with razor blades, Bob.
Okay, I know that.
You guys don't know. I mean, it was a beautiful evening here, and I'm not trying to be an ass or anything, but about 45 minutes before the show started, because I had a rerun going with Mark Levine, I was out in the yard with the boy throwing a baseball. And you know what? If it hadn't been for having to do the show, I'd still be out in the yard throwing a baseball with the boy, because this is one of those little paradise evenings that I've been waiting for since winter started.
Oh, my goodness.
That is true, Bob.
That is true. That's the truth.
I would have a bottle of something golden, sparkly, and fermented wide open. But you
have to understand, we are sorely, all of us, the United States of America, the world at large, are sorely just ripped off from the truth. We don't know what is truth or what is a lie.
And we are shaken and stirred and rattled and eaten alive and begrimed and slimed with the whole political process that we've been putting up with. And the he said, she said, and does Jared Wright love America as much as you do? And why won't you wear a flag pin? And why did you put up with Monica? And we're wore the... I'm about this close, Bob, to some really fun words that I'm ashamed for my mother, God rest her soul, to know that I know how to use. But I am really... we're all close to wore the hell out. So
my friend, Bob Kincaid, and I think of you as that down there in West Virginia.
Oh, I know, Bob. I'm not barking at you. I'm
bark at me. Bark at me.
You know.
No, please bark at me. Tell me what you feel inside your soul, right down in the.
I'm a damn wreck, Bob. Okay, I'm a wreck. Like I said
to
Caro.
I am fed up with it too.
I have never feared a terrorist. I'm not worried about what happens when Jesus comes back or any of that stuff. I am worried all to hell about $6 a gallon gas and $8 a gallon milk, and how the hell I'm going to put food on my family, and how we get from point A to point B, no matter what kind of vehicle we're driving. I am worried about this country. I am scared to damn death about this country, and I, for one, am hungry for some damn answers. You know, at least make a play at some answers on the part of our political candidates, because I got two choices. I got to hear them from Hillary Clinton, or I got to hear them from Barack Obama, because John McCain wants to put the unemployed to work, get and make them more employable, and all that crazy crap, and he wants to reform Social Security, and he wants to fix Medicare, and I've had it about up to here with that junk.
Bob, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. It never has, okay? The only thing that matters, and the only thing that I know for a fact, is that if you stand up and just stand there and don't turn your back to them and just give them your backside, you just stand in their face and you don't give it up. You just take it down. Take them down, Bob. You can do it. You know you can, because you've faced them all your life. The punks, those, what do you call them again, bullies in the goddamn schoolyard. You stand in front of them, and you just stand up to them, and you don't give them anything. And it's time that this United States of America, the people thereof, get their back up and just don't back off. Just stand up. I'm tired of it. You are too.
I'm sick to death of it.
Voice.
Yeah.
I hear it in your voice. Just stand up and just sock them in the nose.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm going to. The Barack Obama is opening his presidential campaign headquarters in Beckley tomorrow morning. I'm going to be there. And I'm
we'll
gonna
be there.
And I'm gonna ask some questions, and since it's West Virginia, I'm gonna be asking me some mountaintop removal questions and see if they're gonna get serious about it.
Well, do that, Bob. But remember this: I don't know if Carol's a donut dolly, but dang it, I'd like to meet her on the beach. But I never got to the beach. I was always in the jungle.
Yep.
Okay? And you and I are in a jungle right now. And Bob, you want to go to that Barack Obama fest or whatever and ask some questions, right?
Yeah.
You're in a jungle and you don't got no way out. You got to fight and ask whatever question you want to. It doesn't matter if you get beat down or if you beat them down. It matters that you stood there and fought. Because she didn't stand where I stood.
Bob, she wasn't saying that she did. Come on.
No, I know that, Bob. I heard her voice. I listened to every bit of her speak. But, Bob, I heard something you didn't hear. Okay?
Okay.
I heard something you didn't hear. I heard that part that, you know, kind of like, you know, that Marilyn Monroe thing. Like, okay, yeah, blow the wind up my skirt. I'll just go whichever way you want me to go, Mr. whatever his name is, DeMille. That's what I heard. Okay?
I didn't get that. You know,
you didn't get it because you weren't.
I dig it. But is there a?
It's a game, Bob. It's both sides of the question. If you ask the question, there's two sides of it, and there's two answers to it. But there's a question we have to ask one another, Bob. Have I ever lied to you?
No, hell no.
Have you ever lied to me?
No.
Okay, do I play you for a fool?
Never.
Nor do you play me for one, and that's the answer to the question that we just asked each other. I will never lie to you, Bob. Please don't lie to me.
No, of course not.
I will not, and I cannot forgive a liar. And I will not play like I was in the NOM. I will not tell you I was there just because I want your sympathy. I want to give you an answer to the solution or the question or a solution to the question you're asking me. And the solution is don't go to war because you will never, ever, ever be the same. And the United States of America went to war in a country across the seas, okay? Vietnam first. And now Iraq. And Iraq and Vietnam are the same thing. We attacked a country that never attacked us for our own political reasons, not for anything that we can gain from it, because you're not going to get anything out of Iraq except people that hate you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I found a blog post over at welcometopottersville.blogspot.com, our buddy JP.
Mm.
And I agree with him. He said, of all the stuff that I've read, this is the make you weep the fastest that he said he thinks he's ever seen. And it is. And I'll probably hit it a little bit later this evening, but holy cats. I got a bunch of them stacked up here, Bob. Let me roll on, bud.
Question, Bob.
Yes.
I love your children. I do. I've seen each and every one of them in photographs that Agnes has sent me.
Yeah.
I think of them. I do. And I have even sent presents.
Yes, you have.
Because I love your children. But, Bob, you have to honestly answer this question. Have you and I ever met man to man?
Hell no. Nope, absolutely not.
Family to family, but I love your family. But Bob, I would die in my heart, in my soul, if I saw your daughter dragged out of a burning...
Don't even make me think about it. Don't make me think about it.
With her legs broken.
Don't make me think about it.
Okay. That's it. See, those Iraqi children are your children.
Yes, they are. They damned well are. And that's why it does give me the sweats. And that's why it does give me the horrors. And that's why the prospect of starting it in Iran just absolutely fills me with a sense of just, you know, go curl up in a fetal ball and suck your thumb horror. It does, Bob. It really does.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob Kincaid, for feeling in your soul what I feel in my soul, what I worry about, what I cry about, why the tears and why the sweat runs out of my... why the sweat runs out of me every night that I lay on that pillow next to my bed. I wish to God that we had had the sense to have never allowed the Supreme Court to give us this monster that is in this... it's sitting in, squatting in the White House right now, Bob. I just pray that one day your father and I will stand shoulder to shoulder and drive these demons out of the United States of America, and we once again will be the nation
that we can be.
The people of the people and by the people. But that's what your father fought for, and that's what I fought for, and by God, that's what George Bush
despises. Hey, Bob, I got to roll on, brother. They're piling up on me here, but
so,
thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. I just got an hour. Well, I shortened the show with all the conversation.
Yeah, I bet you did. Okay.
But thanks,
Bob.
Have a
good weekend, my friend.
You too, my brother. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. There's a whole nation that is aching the way Bob is aching. Question is, do we do it by ourselves? Or do we bring it, do we try to ease it a little bit together? All we got in common is our misery. Least we can do is share it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello. Oh, hey, Bob, it's Sandra. Interesting show.
Thank you, Sandra. How are you?
Oh no, I'm all right. I'm sitting here doing working on my biology class. Anyway, how's your health?
It looks like I'm about to have to say goodbye to my gallbladder. After 45 happy years together, we have reached irreconcilable differences.
Mm, that's too bad. I hope that works out. God, you don't want to... They said that's the only alternative, huh?
So far, yeah. There's that and a little hernia that needs repairing before I sneeze and blow my esophagus out of my chest. You know.
Oh, God. Wow.
I didn't plan on this.
No, I'm sure you didn't. Jesus. Well...
Apart from that, I'm fine, you know, but what I've found out the hard way, Sandra, is that when your gallbladder goes south, it makes you think, you know, it makes you do the whole Fred Sanford, you know, Elizabeth, this is the big one thing.
You probably had a lot of chest pains, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the real fun ones, you know, the one where you look at your beloved spouse and go, it's been fun,
No, I don't mean to laugh. That just sounds really...
I got to laugh because it scared me.
I know, that's kind of scary, though.
Yeah, it is. But, no, they say it's a rotten gallbladder, so...
Yeah. They rule out the heart. Anything is almost better than
that. Well, yeah, exactly. You know, once they said, hey, your heart's fine, I'm like, well, okay, everything else is gravy.
Right, sort of. But you know what I mean? So that's better news than what you probably was thinking. Jesus, man.
I don't know yet when anything's going to go down, but if it goes down, it'll probably go down in the next couple of weeks.
You'll just take a break from your show, right?
Yeah, I'll take 2 or 3 days or however long it takes for the medicine to wear off. But the thing is, Sandra, you've sort of opened the door for me on something real quick, and I want you to get into what you want to get into. But I've mentioned several times, a couple of times tonight, that I have never once in my life been afraid of a terrorist, and I have never once in my life been worried about what if Jesus comes tomorrow. But you know what? We are a terrified nation, but do you realize that more people die every year from medical negligence than die from terrorists, lightning strikes, and gunshot wounds combined?
Oh, no. I mean, and just sort of the inaccessibility of it all is just killing thousands of people, you know?
Yeah, that's the point. That's the people who get to go to doctors.
Isn't it like 100,000 people, like, you know, die from mishaps? Is it something like that? Is it that high or something really crazy?
Yeah, you know, stupid stuff like falling off ladders. Darwin Award winners, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to say that the hospitals aren't very, they're pretty frightening. I mean, the last time I was in one, you know, they gave me a spinal tap instead of an epidural, which is not very good for young women to have. It's a big problem. And so, you know, I was scared to death from some damn mistake. You know what I mean?
Right, and that's what's scaring me. I mean, I've been sitting here thinking, you know, whenever they do schedule this, how do I say, you know, I mean, are you tempting fate to open the mic and go, well, I'll be back in a little bit? Or do you say, hey, everybody, I love it, and if anything goes wrong, I've loved it, it's been wonderful, and if anything goes wrong, you know that, you know, I love you, and later. I've never been through this. I don't know how to deal with this. I'm a wreck.
The point, because there was this radio host guy named Pete Wilson who was talking about some operation he was going to have, and unfortunately for him, he died.
Oh, dear.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, you know, and these people are the kind of people who have, like, the best health care on earth, and it's just like, yikes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
And it's just sort of, I mean, I don't have any health care right now, but thankfully I'm relatively healthy. But you're also sort of, well, maybe you're somewhat better off as opposed to dealing with these charlatans and the bad drugs that are out there, you know?
In a way. I mean, we've got, because we are dead broke, we've got some Medicaid coverage here in West Virginia, and that will hopefully cover the surgery and a rag to bite on and a shot of whiskey to put me out. But I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm wondering, you know, if you don't have any insurance and you don't have any means of getting insurance, even for what we have here, and you know it's got to go, and you just put up with it, and you just say, well, I'll work till I die. What kind of a thing is that to do to the American worker?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, the whole idea of it is just so horrific, and I don't know what they've done to convince people that that's an okay way to subsist. Because it's not like we're living in the sub-Sahara. That's the thing that kills me. It's like there's multiple tiers in this country, and some of us are looking through the window, seeing what is possible, and then the reality is it's not available to us, and you're supposed to just be not bitter about it. Should I use that word?
You know, I wish more people would use that word, Sandra, because I don't know why everybody in this country who works for a living isn't doing the whole network thing and flinging the window open and screaming, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Well, because I think that, you know, Americans tend to have a hard time with hearing the truth, you know. They seem to be obsessed with this American exceptionalism to their own detriment, and it's a bunch of BS for most of us, you know?
But we're constantly being told by the right wing, Sandra, about the pioneer spirit and rugged individualism and picking yourself up by your own bootstraps. Where did we trade all of that in? And I don't think it was Democrats' fault. Where did we trade all of that in for cowering behind our TV sets and just hoping it gets better if only our candidate wins on American Idol?
Well, it's just absurd. I mean, Horatio Alger, you know, that whole story with the bootstrap, that fool didn't have a success until he started writing stories about being rich. You know what I mean? It's just a bad joke, you know, and people buy into that nonstop. I mean, I had an argument today with somebody who was like, oh, no, we can't have the government involved in net neutrality. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, because you trust AT&T.
What? Right, that's what I was trying to say. I'm like, well, if you don't have the government involved in this, who do you think is going to deal with it?
Well, you know, what would a baseball game look like without an umpire?
Well, it's just, you know, it's just a mentality. It's just sort of like, wake the hell up. I don't know. I, at this point, Bob, I'm just sort of rapidly shutting down, you know, as far as just dealing with people, you know, because they're just getting on my nerves.
Well, and so, yeah, you're manifesting something, Sandra, that's going on in my own heart and my own soul, and what I perceive to be going on with a lot of people around this country, the emails I get and stuff like that, where our ability to tolerate the BS has, frankly, we've gone above and beyond, us liberals, us progressives, and we're choking on the stuff now. I was just looking in the chat room, and we got a guy who sat down for a haircut the other day and had to get a lecture from some woman about how good John McCain is for military families. And that sorry SOB won't even sign on to the new Iraq-Afghanistan GI Bill.
No, because he said it's going to make leaving more attractive. I mean, these punitive bastards, I'm so sick to death of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sick of these people up high deciding how to social engineer something so they can, you know, maximize the exploitation. I mean, it's sick, and they're so out front with it. Then you have some dumb woman who's pretending that they're otherwise. I mean, that's the media. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the media like that debate that was just, I don't know, did you spend time talking?
I didn't watch it. I watched clips of it until I felt like it was time to take the anti-emetic medication. It was an embarrassment, yeah. And that's why I was asking Carolyn Kay a little bit ago, you know, we ought to find out what the statistically relevant number is for how many Americans have to turn the damn television off before the ABCs, CBSs, CNNs, and Foxes and so forth get the bloomin' message.
Well, and this whole sort of, you know, Obama as, you know, exotic and not quite right narrative that they're trying to weave is so despicable. Wow. Because I'm not really, you know me, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid with Obama. He's just another politician. But I don't appreciate the, oh, look, he's, you know, black. And so maybe he's not quite
yeah, is that what, is that the new word, exotic? Is that, you know, the black,
yeah,
is exotic?
Of, yeah, that's the word that I've heard. And also the combination of what they're all kind of throwing together in the kitchen sink with him is that. And it's kind of coming out as if he's, you know, not... he's not the kind of American, you know, not quite American or odd sort of, and it's just all just a bunch of BS, because what is the difference between Obama and these other people? You know?
See, I just keep seeing millionaires. I'm crazy, but that's what I keep seeing. John McCain, millionaire. Well, okay, his wife's a millionaire. Barack and Michelle, well, they just registered their first couple of million. Bill and Hillary, 100 million in the last 7 years.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I see millionaires.
No, I mean, that's a given, you know, and you just have gradations of it. But, you know, and it's, you know, as far as any of these people representing our interests, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't trust any of them, although just aesthetically speaking, I just think the Obama presidency would, you know, make some of these people here's head explode. They wouldn't know what to do. But that's just sort of a bit, you know, juvenile on my part. It's much more serious.
Well, if that's juvenile, then I'm with you right there in juvenile hall, Sandra, because I want to see Bill O'Reilly's head explode.
That's what I'm saying. Just on the fence of that, you know, they have some Negro in the White House. You know, it's crazy. You know, it'll be crazy. Speaking of Negro, Condoleezza Hare, she's a torturer. Why is he still in office, Bob?
Yeah, well, do you realize, and this, I mean, it wasn't a news story that I saw. This is just one of those, you know, Bob puts one and one together and gets 12. I saw a news story the other day about the security for the Pope's visit, okay? And then I got an email from our buddy the rocket scientist today who tells me that his father-in-law and another senior citizen male had a screening problem at the White House because the long about Christmas time, the security detail was convinced that the old fella's cane might be a gun. You know, we're talking about an 80-year-old former government employee. I see a thing today where a guy got too close to papal federal security and set off the radiation scanner because he'd had a barium test the other day. Meanwhile, I have to go back to the fact that, you know, people are let into Barack Obama's appearances. Oh, what's that you got, an Uzi?
And what about that fool that touched him, ran up on him?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
Wanting a picture, and Obama's like, you know, get off, basically. And I'm like, oh, what's up? You know, am I going to have to hear, as Mike Malloy keep talking about one day, looking at the TV and seeing what we don't want to see? I don't even want to say it.
No.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. And
you know, and I don't wish that on, I don't, you know what I mean? I don't wish that on this country because that's not going to be good. It's gonna
but what you're pointing out though, Sandra, as far as I can tell it, because frankly, it applies to a certain extent, almost as much to Hillary Clinton. Is there the other side? Is, I mean, chock-a-block with, you know, real live, honest to God, crazy people. Okay, there's people that have been hating on Hillary Clinton since 1991. There are members of Congress who have gone into their backyard and shot watermelons over her.
Well, yeah, what if that man had went up to Obama wanted to be infamous, you know what I mean? Not
yeah.
just wanted a picture.
Well, yeah, wanted his Arthur Brimmer moment.
And the thing in Texas, like you were saying, letting all these fools go in unsearched.
It's Texas, it's California, it's Washington, it's Missouri, it's Alabama. That's where all these things have taken place with the security.
And you can't have, you know, and the Pope sets off a radiation for a barium test. Wow, that's deep. That they have such that it's that sophisticated, yet they can't seem to protect the Negro.
A month ago, a cat who had leukemia treatments set off a scanner in the median of a highway in Washington State, and they chased the guy down at 70 miles an hour to find out what the radiation threat was. It was a cat who'd had leukemia treatments. No kidding.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah, and it's just like you couldn't get within a mile of Bush and the rest of those torturers.
But
you know?
but they're that way because they're scared to... First, they're terrified of what we're not terrified of, Sandra. They're terrified of the terrorists, all right? They walk around just pooping themselves over terrorism.
Well, you're talking about, you mean these people in power?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know what?
But the second thing is, they're scared of the terrorists, but they're more scared of us. They are. George Bush is scared teetotally to death of the American people. Kid you not.
Ugh.
I know.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's definitely sort of, the disconnect is ginormous in this country. With the so-called leaders, you know.
Yeah, it is. And
that whole thing you're talking about with the protection, yeah, that's the real worry. I hadn't really thought too much about Hillary, but I suppose so. Remember that fool that attacked her campaign headquarters, that whole madness?
Sure,
and
sure.
And they burnt one down in Indiana the other day, didn't they?
Yeah, and have you heard any of that garbage going on with John McCain?
With Mr. Morton, the salt guy, that's what I call him.
Yeah, no, the short answer is no. You know, we don't, you know, we're the kumbaya crowd. We sit around, we sing songs, we want to make love, not war, all that stuff. And meanwhile, they're, you know, out there in right wing land, they're clearing the muzzle breaches.
Well, no, and also when you look at the history, the people who fell away, you know, from Huey Long on up to Kennedy, you know, they were all on, you know, our side, so to speak, right?
Yeah, they never, you know, nobody ever threatened Richard Nixon.
No.
The only person who ever threatened Gerald Ford was a crazy woman that had been hanging out with what's his name? Charles Manson.
Oh, Squeaky?
Yeah, Squeaky. Squeaky was just nuts. You know, she may have thought Gerald Ford was a squirrel or something.
And the other one that got Ronald Reagan was fascinated with that weird-ass Jody Foster.
Well, not only that, the guy that got Reagan, his family was family pals with the Bush family.
Oh, that's right. I knew it was. Yeah, well, no, but then the Bush, you know, I just found out that fool was in Dallas when Kennedy was shot.
Yes, he was.
I didn't realize that. And I thought, you know, the Bushes, that's deep. That's a deep-ass family, Bob. They scare me.
Well, you know, there's a reason that Malloy calls him what he calls him.
And I keep waiting for Jeb to pop up like a fucking... Oops, sorry.
That's okay. Welcome to the Internet.
I'm sorry. Like a bad penny. Well, no, I try not to because, you know, it's not very good to be cussing, but sometimes...
I know. But you don't know the struggles I have behind this microphone, Sandra.
Well, no, you do pretty well for it because I know it's just broadcast on the Internet, so you do have leeway. But, you know, I figure you probably want to keep it as tidy as possible.
Well, I recognize that because people are podcasting and stuff like that, you never know when they're playing it or where they're playing it. And I don't want to make parenting any more difficult, you know, when 3 weeks later little Johnny looks up and uses the F word because he heard Bob use it. It was bad enough dealing with that with me and Agnes and our own kids, for heaven's sakes. You know, it's the whole story I told about, because, you know, I throw the word bastard around a little bit, and we were out at the car lot one day, and a guy with a hat on that looked a lot like the hat that a buddy of ours wore came up to talk to me on the car lot, and there's Ferg in the automobile, and he looks at his mother and says, "Mommy, that dirty bastard's got Uncle's hat on." And I get back in the family truckster, and Agnes looks at me and says, "You got some splaining to do."
Oh, no.
That one's on you, baby. You're the one that uses that one.
No, well, you know, the kids, they do hear. They hear whatever, and they just sort of, yeah, they will.
But there are nights I just want to sit and power swear.
Yeah, no, I don't, you know, I don't know how certain, I don't know how some of these hosts hold back. I don't know how you guys do it. I don't, because some of the stuff that go down, it's not, you know, there is no censor. You know, you need to let go, because it's obscene what they're doing, so I don't know why us being obscene on the air is a problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know completely. If it was up to me, but, you know, that's the thing about doing terrestrial radio. You know, if I screw up, I apologize. If somebody on terrestrial radio screws up, that's $275,000 to them, $275,000 to the station, $275,000 to the network, and to every station that carried it.
But it's just so sick because I can't get past the fact that we don't have any problems obliterating whole countries, yet we get scrimmage about tits being shown, like Janet Jackson, remember that?
Oh.
Or someone saying the F word, and it's just, it don't make no sense, you know? It's just sort of goes to that whole thing with Americans can't be told the truth, you know?
And I think that is the heart and soul of it, Sandra.
I mean, I wish I could remember this quote of James Baldwin. It was just unbelievable what he said. It was so true, just about sort of, you know, Americans not being able to deal with what they need to. I don't know. I can't remember, but it's a great quote, and it's the same sort of thing. And I don't know. I'm just sort of getting really sick of the see no evil, no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil type mentality that's going on. You know. And I just the other question I had for you was, what are you thinking about this primary now? I know everyone's sick of it, but I'm kind of. Do you think Barack's going to get it, or what's happening? Any analysts on that?
Sandra, this guy, I saw where Howard Dean has called for the superdelegates to go ahead and commit.
What does that mean? I'm sorry, I'm just sort of...
Well, I mean, he wants people to come out and say, I'm for Hillary or I'm for Obama, so that they can do the math straight up and know where they're standing. But as far as I'm concerned, this is going to Denver. It just is.
So you really just see, this is what we were talking about, and yeah, is that what, because I don't want to, I don't know if that's a really good idea.
Oh, I didn't say it was. I did not say it's a good idea.
Able to take how? Because I think that I thought she was in trouble in Pennsylvania, or not.
It depends on how you read the tea leaves or the goat entrails or whatever it is we're doing now to determine our political future. You know, on the one hand, you know, her chief spokesman is now saying, well, Barack must win. He must win Pennsylvania convincingly in order to blah, 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 blah. And Obama's people are saying, well, you know, it's not enough for her to win by 5 or 10 points. I mean, she's got to crush Obama in Pennsylvania to stay alive. And
well, see, but it keeps being pushed down the road then, huh?
Precisely. And by whom?
Yeah, see, I mean, that's what I don't get. It's like, what in the world?
Well, it drives me nuts. I mean, you're calling from California. I'm not trying to be offensive, but, you know, you guys had your say, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing left but Kentucky, Indiana, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia.
And don't forget Puerto Rico.
And Puerto Rico.
Which is my favorite. And part of that.
Yeah, but yet the rhetoric keeps getting hotter.
Right. And the sort of, you know, all the criteria keeps changing.
Yeah,
I was under the impression that if Obama somehow squeaks out Pennsylvania, she got to go. But she's talking as if nothing's going to make her go. She's
right. Yeah.
Never going to go.
Nothing but the big hook off the side of the stage, you know. Let's see. They're saying, okay, she's going to get canceled. Just today I heard it, and I'm sick of it. Today I heard, well, you know, it looks like she's going to take Pennsylvania, but, you know, she's not out of the woods for long, because then she has to take Indiana. If she doesn't take Indiana in a very closely contested race, then certainly she's blah, 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 blah. But by tomorrow they'll say that, well, you know, if she loses Indiana by 2.3 points.
But then there's the is it North Carolina? That's another one.
Yeah, they're saying North Carolina is a dead loser for her.
Because of all the cultified black folks who are going to vote for Obama?
I guess, yeah, because it works with the paradigm, Sandra, and the paradigm is that Obama only wins states that the Democrats have no hope of winning in the general election.
Oh, well, see, you know what? That's I don't really like what the implications of that comment is.
Well, yeah, because that means that in the so-called big states that Democrats can expect to win, that everybody's just going to walk away and go, "Well, screw it, it wasn't Hillary. I'm voting for Ron Paul now."
Or what, Mr. Morton?
Yeah, well, yeah, or yeah, or John McBush, Mr. Morton. I'm hanging on to that one, Sandra. I'm sorry, you've lost it. I'm taking it away from you.
That's
just crazy talk. That's just lunacy.
It is.
Because on the other hand, there is a study that came out of, I think it was women voters in Pennsylvania, and they pointed out to these women voters in Pennsylvania all the stuff that John McCain really, really stands for, like, you know, every woman must keep her legs together or get it sewed shut.
Oh, yeah, forced pregnancy.
Yeah. And the stuff is beginning to leak out about, oh, I'm going to fix Medicare by putting it on Wall Street, and we're going to put Social Security on Wall Street, too. Won't that be lovely? And, he's going to fix unemployment compensation so that people have to chop cotton while they're collecting their unemployment checks. And the same old crazy Republican crap. And the upside of it is that when people were made aware of this stuff, they went, holy cow, that's McCain?
Well, that's because his natural constituency is this anemic, jaundiced media, which, you know, won't level with the people about him. I mean, he's horrific, that guy. Even Goldwater hated that fool.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
So, you know, it's hard to say, but I can't see it not ending in Denver.
Well, see, I don't understand. Because, okay, let's just say, just, you know, in our little fantasy world, Obama wins Pennsylvania. I'm just talking about just to shut it down. Obama wins Pennsylvania. Ooh, he wins North Carolina. And ooh, he wins Indiana. Then what?
Then the media comes out and says, well, you know, her last stand will be in West Virginia.
You know what? you are not even right for saying that. You know, that's, that's crazy talk. She got to go away.
Yeah, but it is. That's what they'll say. I mean, because this is not politics. This is entertainment. Remember back when TV was a little bit more traditional before cable, and you had 13 weeks, and then you had 13 weeks, and then you had a summer full of reruns?
Mm.
Well, the networks hated the summer because it was just reruns.
And no money-making opportunities.
The media have to stretch this out all the way to Denver.
Right, but the opportunity cost on that is really getting higher and higher. I'm sorry.
Oh, it is. Statistically, we don't do well with brokered conventions.
Well, no. I mean, no. Wasn't the last one McGovern?
McGovern was one. That's when the superdelegates were invented.
That was out of frustration because he was.
You had a contest with Ted Kennedy ran against Jimmy Carter when Jimmy Carter was the incumbent in 1980.
Right.
He made Jimmy Carter run an actual primary campaign, and of course that did in fact contribute to the trouble. He made Jimmy Carter spend money that Jimmy Carter didn't need to spend that he needed to have on hand when he was fighting back Reagan.
That's right. Yeah, you know, see, that's
one of the real world things that's going on here, Sandra, is that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are pulling in money hand over fist, but they're spending it as fast as they get it on each other.
The thing is, though, it looks like Obama has a larger base to tap because he has a million people giving up $20, which means...
Yeah, but how long can he tap those people when they're losing their jobs, losing their houses, and paying $6 a gallon for gasoline?
I guess. So you're saying that if they don't wrap it up, they're going to not have the money to run the general. And if the convention is in August, right?
Yeah, August 24th through 28th.
Which leaves a minute after. That's a disaster. That is a disaster for us.
But remember, and I know this would run. This goes probably would go. Guy James would straighten me out on this. I'll bet you. But remember, Sandra, we're Democrats. We can screw up a one car funeral.
I like the circular fire squad.
Yeah,
too.
Fire. Oh.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I just, part of me just, I'm not even too sure. I'm going to vote, of course. And it's just, all of it is just really starting to wear. But some people say that once they get the nominee, McCain won't have a prayer.
But, head to head, he doesn't.
Because he just don't have, when you look at, like, what you're talking about.
But wait, Sandra, please, time out. It's not going to be Hillary or Obama against John McCain. It's going to be Hillary or Obama against John McCain and the entire flippin' media.
Right. No. That's the thing. And if the other night was an indication on what they're going to be,
Bingo.
Going at the Democrats, that's... Yeah.
I mean, John McCain will be able to run his campaign on a shoestring because Charlie Gibson and George Snuffleupagus and Timmy and Chris Matthews and the rest of the sleaze bags will do his work for him. They will carry his water for him, whether it is Hillary or Obama.
You know what? I can't even begin to wrap my head around the idea of a McCain administration. God.
Hey, wrap your head around a McCain Rice ticket.
No. You know what? I'm sorry to take it down to this level, but once again, just on the strength of the hairdo, she cannot.
Well, that's why I'm rooting so hard for this CondeMustGo.com effort to get people to sign a petition and compel her resignation. The woman perjured herself in front of the Congress.
Is incredible.
Yes, it is.
It's powerful, and I was like, you need to go. She really needs to go.
Yeah, and there's 54,000 people that say so far.
The thing
that's important is they're trying to get pressure on Hillary and Obama to demand her resignation.
Well, no, I still am so disturbed that that story has just dissipated. I can't believe it.
Yeah, nothing to see here. These are not the droids you're looking for.
Oh, man. Well, listen, I'll let you go. That was very entertaining. But I'll be praying for you with your upcoming battles.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandra. I'll let everybody know when it goes down. I mean, I know I know precisely zero right now, except for the fact that I can't have anything spicy anymore. And you have
okay.
no idea how that pisses me off.
Oh, God, that pissed me off, too. But anyway, so have a good weekend and take care.
All right. Thanks, Sandra.
Bye
now. Our pal Sandra in California. You know, there's something magic about Friday nights. It really is. It's an opportunity for us to all sort of, you know, sort stuff out. Let's see here. Hi, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Ed.
Hey, how you doing?
Muddling through.
I finally
got my garden ground disced, so I'm getting a little bit excited.
Oh, you got it. Somebody come over with a plow and done it?
Well, he come over with a plow at the beginning of March, and then just yesterday it finally dried out enough, and he came over with a disc and disced it up real good, so I'm going to get after it pretty soon.
Okay, well, we're going to use the tiller tomorrow, and after that it'll be free, and it's a big one and easy to use.
I may be coming after you if you don't mind.
Well, I thought you would already, I thought you'd already been here.
Yeah, well... There wasn't any sense in doing anything until he dissed it, because, you know what plowed dirt looks like. You can't do anything with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's not too late to get a few spuds in the ground, maybe some onions, and then start thinking about corn and potatoes and greens and green beans and all the fun stuff.
You can put your cabbage and all that stuff out, weather don't affect it too much.
Yeah. I love
broccoli and stuff like that, if you like that.
Yeah, broccoli and Brussels sprouts, I just love, but they get so doggone buggy, Ed.
Yeah. I never did have a whole lot of trouble with it. We don't eat that much of it, so I don't mess with it anymore.
Well, I've got a square that's about 100 by 100. So I ought to be able to grow some stuff.
My goodness, I reckon.
Yeah, you know the old saying, never plant more garden than your wife can work.
Well, I'm not going to say that to Dreama. You might
no,
get away
with heaven,
that.
Heavens to Betsy, no, Ed, don't say that to Dreama.
She's big enough to pull a plow, but I'm not going to tell her that.
And I'm just staying way the heck away from that.
Yeah.
I like Dreama, and I like for Dreama to keep liking me.
Well, I'm living proof that she don't get mad at people too easy. If I was going to talk to you on a couple things, number one, I wasn't going to mess with the McCain deal, but he is absolutely one of the worst Republicans that they could have ever picked, in my opinion, He is a complete, I think the time that he spent in that prison camp really give him a deranged mind. I despise even to hear him talk. And the thing of it is, he come out, I think it was today, said the economy wasn't as bad as they said it was.
Well, wasn't that nice of him?
Yeah, well.
I feel better already.
Yeah, me too. I wonder about a fifth of half of the workforces that are laid off, and I listened to 5 minutes of Neil Bork. That's all I could stand.
That's more than I can stand.
He said he said that things weren't as bad as they seemed. He said to start with, the poorest of the people done the best, and the middle class held about even, and the money people took a 26% hit. And I thought, boy, you know how they can turn stuff around. Number one, if you lay off 20% of your workforce, or 15, how do you expect not to take a 20% hit? Number two, to say that the middle class hasn't taken a hit on jobs, on the prices, 21% increase in groceries in a year. And then the only reason that the poor has done a little bit better and of course that's going to show up where they haven't before it's over, is because we upped the minimum wage. So it surprised me that he didn't turn around and say that we did good there, you know, that since the minimum wage.
Oh, but according to right-wing freaks like Neil Bortz, the poor live a life of luxury, and the rich just get by.
Well,
I mean, he's such a liar, he just turns everything completely on its head.
Yeah. Well, he's a liar all the way, you know, to say that the workers are doing better than what they're saying they're doing, and that mentally they have set themselves to be poor. They're poor because they want to. And, you know, I remember looking through a barbed wire fence when I was a kid and saw the people with a swimming pool and bicycles and stuff like that. I guess I chose that. And that's basically what he says.
Well, see, Ed, this kind of hateful crap that Neil Bortz and those other right-wingers preach is nothing but a modified sort of paganistic brand of Calvinism, where if God likes you, you're rich. But if you're poor,
yeah,
that's proof that God didn't think much of you.
Yeah, well, I agree that some people do choose not to do a whole lot better. Some of them are... They are raised under welfare, and that's where they stay. But most people that I've seen try to get out from under that. I know I got neighbors right here that their parents didn't do too good, but they graduated from high school and so forth, and they've got pretty good jobs and are trying to keep their head above water. But let me ask you, how deep do you see this gas thing? And I'm not talking about the price. Where is this gas thing really taking us? I mean,
it's taking us down the toilet. I don't think that anybody is served anymore by trying to soft soap anything or pablum it or anything. It is taking us down the toilet because. Virtually everything, you can't cast your eye around your own home without, in the first 5 seconds, putting your eye on something that is directly related to petroleum. Whether it's a plastic milk jug or water jug, or some sort of synthetic countertop, or, you know, your very shoes themselves. And because of that, we're going to be absolute. It's not going down, okay? It's just not going to go down. I mean, well,
why is it going up though? Why? I mean,
for one, the world is running out. You know, a Russian minister who was, I guess, not covered closely enough, quietly admitted the other day that his country has reached peak oil. Saudi Arabia has reached or will very soon reach peak oil. Same thing for Iran. Same thing for Iraq. Same thing for Venezuela. Same thing for Mexico and Canada. Everybody. It is getting scarcer, and it's getting scarcer and scarcer, and as it becomes more scarce, the struggle to control it is going to tear the world to absolute pieces.
Well, let me... use something that may not be too related to it, but if I got 1,000 dang cows out in the field and something kills 999 of them, does that make the other one worth a whole lot more than what the other cows are worth?
Depends on how hungry you are.
Well, I'd find something else to eat, and that's where I'm going with that is we've got ways. And Bush and those people are oil people, Bob. They got oil wells.
We got capped oil wells in the United States.
We got capped
oil wells in West Virginia, but we don't have enough of it to keep us going because we don't cut back on our consumption. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride kind of thing, Ed. But if we had taken Jimmy Carter at his word, which we did not do to our detriment, we wouldn't be in this spot right now. Because back then was when it was time to start sorting out these problems.
Mm-hmm.
See, the problems get harder when the solutions have to come faster and you don't have leisure time, so to speak, for the research and development people to come up with the answers. Because now we're looking at the research and development people and saying, come up with the answers tomorrow. And pressured answers are 9 times out of 10 worse answers than the answers that you get when you've got the time to sit and think about it and roll it around and consider it and make good sense out of it. So you've got stuff like the ethanol business out there where we're all going to raise corn to make alcohol to run the cars. Well, the problem with that is that when you do that, you start going hungry because you're running your car on your dinner.
And you're destroying the trees and the grass and the so forth that purifies the air.
And you're wearing out the soil growing the corn, and you're using and what petroleum products you've got left, you've still got to use to produce synthetic fertilizers to make the corn go and to make the factories go that turn the corn into the alcohol.
Well, I got a real gut shot feeling that, and I usually, or maybe I'm just turning to be a coward in my older age, but I got a gut shot feeling that we're in a world of crap.
We are, and it would have been okay if you said what the other world was too, because you know what, we are, we just are, and that's the thing. That's why I got so damn mad with that pageant that was on the other night on ABC. These are the real things we need to be talking about. America needs FDR-style leadership right now, worse than it needed FDR-style leadership when Hoover was president.
And the nearest dang thing we had to that was Kucinich or Edwards. And look what we got.
Yeah, but even with what we got left, I mean, those, say what you will about either one of them, they're not dummies. And
but
as
they're choked to death by the capitalist system and Wall Street.
Well, sure, but even with that, we couldn't give them a chance to talk about that and give some hope to America, because that damn stupid George Snuffleupagus was too busy asking Barack Obama why he wouldn't wear a stinking flag pin. You see what I'm getting at, Ed?
Yeah, our media, eighth graders could write and manipulate the news better than what they can.
I'm about to the point that I've come to the conclusion that the American muckety-muck class is only going to figure out that we've got a problem when we start broiling and eating the likes of George Stephanopoulos and Tim Russert and Chris Matthews. Then they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and the Shirley Loves and the Mansons and those guys like that. What a piece of crap they all are. And they, you know, I listen to Mayall, and he exposes a lot of them for what it was. He said there's 6 people that run this state. And he said it wasn't, they weren't in the Senate or in the House. And I believe that.
Oh, the West Virginia Senate is just a dead thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's where every good piece of legislation goes to die.
That's the reason he's running for governor. He said he guaranteed if he got in there, some heads would roll, and he said it wouldn't take no month to get it done either. But you know, I heard you mention Howard Dean, and he wants a commitment from the delegates, super delegates.
Mm-hmm.
He wants that around June 3rd or right after that. You know, he's not asking for that right now, according to the news now today. So he's, but he does want them to go ahead and commit.
Well, he wants to try to have some sort of a rational count before he gets to convention time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, you know what? You can count all day long, but if you got a pretty even split among the superdelegates, and you got a pretty even split in the primary delegates, you're going to Denver. You know what I mean? You're going to sort it out there. Because, you know, that's the process that it's set up to do. It may not work to our benefit, but that's how it's set up.
They're going to be broke as all get out by the time that happens. By the time they finish that up, they'll not have the money to fight McCain.
And, you know, you're talking about a pitiful mess. We got a bunch of cowards for this war, and they're too scared to, couldn't even make the meetings of the National Guard. They couldn't, and Cheney, with him ducking the draft about 6 or 7 times. And then we get a guy like McCain that is, I really think he's unbalanced. I the more I listen.
He is nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. He is.
I really believe that. And, you know, I'm not, it's not through hatred, dislike, disrespect. It just, to me, that's a simple fact. I believe he's mentally deranged.
Well, he can't control his temper. We know that.
Yeah. Well, he's done real good in front of from what I've seen. But they say behind the curtain, he'll pull them down. But
he threw punches, and it's not even the people that he hates. He throws punches at his friends. He calls his wife that word that begins with a C, 4-letter word. He calls his wife that, Ed.
That's unreal. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, he did it. I mean, it's verified. Reporters verified it to the author of The Real McCain.
They were no wonder he's been married about 3 times.
I wasn't sure how many marriages he's had.
I think it's 3. But it's no wonder if he does them like that. And
but he can't get shed of Cindy because she's got all the money. Meanwhile, he filed his income tax returns. You know, why won't the Clintons file their income tax returns? Why won't the Obamas release their income tax returns? Well, McCain just released his income tax returns, but he didn't include his wife's millions and millions of dollars because he doesn't want anybody to see, what a little kept man.
A parasite he is.
Well, yeah, he's a kept man is what he is. He's about a half a step from a gigolo.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want people to see that because he's a maverick. He's a...
They said he had $100 million and paid $86,000 on taxes. I don't know how you got away with that.
Nice work if you can get it, ain't it, Ed? Well, I tell you what, I got to roll on. I'm going to try to hit a few callers here. You want me to put you back on hold?
Sure.
Okay.
And I appreciate your time.
Oh, it's always a joy, Ed.
Anything you get on that where we're headed for, to really discourage the way I feel about where we're headed for, get on the air with it.
I will.
All righty.
All right, you take care, Ed. And I'm going to bug you about that tiller soon.
Okay, well, tell everybody over there we said hi.
All right, and hey to Dreamer.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Ed over in the other side of the river in Fayette County. You guys have done it again. It's Friday night, and you stack the lines up, and I'm running out of time. What's a guy supposed to do, huh? We'll try to get through as many as we can. Let's see. Let's try this one. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
I'll be brief, actually. I'm enjoying other people's contributions so much. I just wanted to make a couple of quick remarks.
Sure.
And let you get to the remaining callers. Sandra mentioned James Baldwin.
Yes.
And it brought to mind a project that I discovered called Americans Who Tell the Truth. And it's a project by an artist named Robert Shetterly, who lives in Maine. And he's been drawing these portraits of progressive American heroes. Everybody from contemporary people like Amy Goodman to earlier pioneers like Jane Addams. And he has a biography, a portrait of Baldwin, and he takes these portraits to like schools all over the country, does these art displays. He also has a set of greeting cards with the people on them.
What's the website before we forget?
AmericansWhoTellTheTruth.org.
Cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. Anyway, I went to the website and I thought he had a quote from a couple of quotes from James Baldwin. That goes along with the biography, and it kind of related to what you and Sandra were talking about. This one quote you were on the topic of how sometimes we don't want to look at some inconvenient truths.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Baldwin said, people who shut their eyes to reality simply invite their own destruction, and anyone who insists on remaining in a state of innocence long after that innocence is dead turns himself into a monster. And
oh my.
Yeah. He went on to say, people who treat other people as less than human must not be surprised when the bread they have cast on the waters comes back floating to them poisoned, and so forth. And so I think it's very much related to the Jeremiah Wright story, you know, and what snippets of him were coming to know. And, you know, his angry side and his appropriately outraged side. And so that's something about the debate, actually, that I enjoyed, because over 10 million people got to hear when Obama was asked, you know, do you love the country more than Jeremiah Wright? Obama got to say, well, you know, he was a Marine. And I think millions and millions of people weren't aware of that fact. And so I think Jeremiah is another military veteran that the right loves to hate. You know, they say they support the troops and Semper Fi and all this stuff until you step
yeah,
out
but
of
let them step out of line and yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, do you think Preston that maybe Reverend Wright's images that he brought to bear from the pulpit, you think maybe any of that might have been shaped by virtue of having been a Marine? What in it was it Korea and Vietnam?
Yeah.
You think that could have shaped his worldview a little bit, or maybe, you know, when he went on and became a Navy corpsman, you realize he was part of the treatment team for LBJ after his heart surgery, right?
I did. I saw that a photo of him attending to LBJ on Wikipedia.
But, you know, George Snuffleupagus didn't have any time to bring that out because he was all over the gotcha business. This is all. But you're right. I'm glad that people did get a chance to hear that if they hadn't turned it off by then.
Right. I'd heard George on with Hannity when particular questions were suggested by Hannity. He was focusing at that time more on the Weather Underground.
Yeah.
Stuff. And so yeah, it's been interesting to see the media, you know, the whole, I don't know, they're getting a lot of blowback and a lot of thoughtful criticism about it, and people are sending emails, and so I think that's another good outcome of this. I thought the second half of the debate was actually pretty informative. Both of them had some good policy suggestions. Hillary brought up the predatory lending practices of the college loan racket,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, made a very good point about how when she was going to college, you know, she got loans for 2 or 3%, whereas now that it's been privatized, taken out of the evil government's hand and put into our friends and private industry, people get charged 20 or 25% interest. You know, we have allowed the youth of our country, mainly youth, but non-traditional age students as well, to be forced into this huge debt, lifelong debt.
And by virtue of, how is that not corporate welfare, Preston?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they love the rhetoric about a free market. It's an imposed market. You know, it's a
command. Look. All those years that we howled about the Soviet Union, well, I've got a command economy. This is a command economy.
Yeah, command economy, that's it. We do need that FDR leadership. I've been rereading the transcript of the nomination acceptance speech he gave in Philadelphia in 1936. It's in the back of one of Tom Hartman's books. And he said, for out of this modern civilization, economic royalists carved new dynasties. New kingdoms were built upon concentration of control over material things through new uses of corporations, banks, and securities, new machinery of industry and agriculture, of labor and capital, all undreamed by the forefathers. By the founding fathers, the whole structure of modern life was impressed into this royal service. And
Lord, if somebody said that on the campaign trail today, they'd holler that he was bitter.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine the response?
He's too angry. We can't have angry politicians.
Socialist, all that America hater, and and the speech just goes on and on like this. Really, great stuff.
This is beautiful stuff, Preston. I'm sorry to cut things short. I do want to hit a last couple of blanks, if they're still there, of course.
Definitely.
But have a wonderful weekend.
Likewise. We'll talk soon.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Preston in Denver. Always brings something enlightening to the table. By the way, I'm going tomorrow to a little program note sort of thing. Going to hang out with Dr. Bill a little bit. Dr. Bill can't do the weekday gig because of things that have changed with his, real get paid for it job. But he wants to start bringing something to the table himself, and I'm going to teach him a little bit about recording and stuff. And we're looking forward to maybe having some recorded segments from Dr. Bill O'Brien soon. So I hope you guys are looking forward to that as much as I am. Okay, let's. Let's keep this rolling. Nope, you left. Oh, I dread this. Tell me you didn't all bail out. Stay on hold for 3 hours for other people. Me, you quit on. Maybe it's because you're on the toll-free line, and for that I appreciate it. I understand that. Hi, who I got?
Timmy! God, how goes the Bob?
Oh, pretty good. Is this Cossack?
Yep.
Okay, what's going on, man?
Besides the projectile vomiting last night, not much. Are these people serious? Of course not, but I mean, you have that jackass Gibson doing a 10-minute riff on his property taxes. My taxes, they went up. Oh, terrible. You know what? For the taxes that you pay,
I can't afford the new Mercedes this year.
Yeah. I mean, the amount that he pays in taxes is what a lot of people earn in a year, for God's sakes. Can you get this through your head?
Like I said, look, do you want one of the, when we start roasting them, you want one of the hams or do you want the tenderloin?
I'll go for a ham.
All right.
Good beans with that.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of like, he says, well, you're not going to tax the rich by taking off the cap on Social Security. Excuse me, it's capped at $97,000. How many people make $97,000 a year in the U.S.?
I saw a statistic earlier today of the Bush tax cuts, Cossack. I think something like 59% of the tax cuts went to the people who make $1.5 million or more a year.
Exactly. And
average tax cut worked out to $92,000.
Gee, what'd you do with your $92,000, Bob?
I spent it all at one of the video poker parlors. I knew, you know what, and the minute I walked away from that little electronic one-armed bandit, the next guy hit.
I would have sworn you would have had Zitta's dancing dollies over at your place.
Jesus. No, I'm not into what Vitter's into.
Oh, my God. I mean,
whip me, beat me, call me Edna, make me write bad checks. No, that's not me.
I mean, I just can't wrap my head around these people. They're talking about Obama being out of touch with people. Excuse me, jerk off. You're the guys that are making millions of dollars a year. How many average Americans make $1 million a year? Not that damn many.
No.
A tiny fraction of 1% make over $1 million a year. And you're complaining that, that Obama's suggesting that we should remove the cap on Social Security taxes that stops at $97,000? How many policemen do you know make $100,000 a year, Bob?
Only the ones on the take, Goss.
Exactly. Or professors, or doctors even. You have very few doctors that make much more than $100,000 a year.
to get those astronomical salaries, you've either got to be a professional athlete or a professional mouse for hire or a politician.
Yeah, yeah. You do.
Or a professional gambler on Wall Street where you can run a company into the dirt, cause the layoffs of tens of thousands of people, and for that...
And then get paid for it.
Yes. They give you tens of...
Damn, what a racket. Look, you left one out, okay? You left one out of the list. You could be a televangelist.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Because while we're having the... poop hemorrhage about Reverend Wright. It's just another day in America when nobody asked John McCain about that fat freak Hagee.
Or Paisley.
No, Paisley's what I saw after I used the wrong mushrooms on the spaghetti, but never mind.
Exactly. But I mean, these people are mad.
Yeah. Time. They're not just mad, they're mean. And I go back to the little bumper sticker on the back of the rusting out Volvos and Subarus with the deadhead sticker. Mean people suck.
Exactly.
And you know what? Charlie Gibson sucks. And George Stephanopoulos sucks. And Tim Russert sucks. And Chris Matthews sucks. And Katie Kirk sucks. And Brian Williams sucks. And Bill O'Reilly sucks. And I'm sorry for being so graphic, and mommies and daddies out there, I apologize. I hope little Johnny doesn't say that. But you know what? It's time for... Cossack, it's time for us to talk this way.
It's past time.
Yeah.
Bob, it's past. I mean, what comes to mind, you've seen Dr. Zhivago, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the scene that keeps running through my head, and these people don't seem to get it, is when the Cossack officer goes out there to quell the mob, and they tear him to pieces, literally.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen to these people. Eat the Rich is not going to be a bumper sticker.
No, it's going to be an economic necessity.
It's going to be, what's for dinner?
What was the movie? Not Steel Magnolias, Fannie Flagg wrote it. They barbecued the guy at the barbecue joint in the Whistle Stop Cafe. Yeah, that really is the trick to eating the rich. It's to have a really good barbecue sauce.
Exactly. I mean, long pork all around.
Long pig, baby. Yeah. Fried green tomatoes. Thank you, Peter Godbold.
There you go. Yeah. That's it. I mean, how crazed are these people? Don't they get it? Don't they understand that we're not back in the roaring 20s.
Did Marie Antoinette get it? Did Tsar Nicholas and Alexandria get it? No.
Actually, in Marie Antoinette's case, she wasn't as bad as the revolutionaries made out, nor were Nicholas and Alexandra. The problem of it is that the people that were actually running things,
yeah, and they became the focus.
Exactly. And, you have to remember...
The President of the United States threw the biggest party in the history of the Republic for a visiting Pope the other day who was an anti-aircraft gunner member of the Hitler Youth.
Exactly.
It was a bigger party than when Andrew Jackson wheeled out the giant cheddar onto the lawn.
And, you know...
Mm. Hey, Koss, I hate to do this, but I got to stop you because I just realized we're out of time and Peter's on the way.
All righty. Take care of him. Have a good weekend.
You too. We'll talk soon.
Yipper.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From North Florida, the Cossack. And from the hills and hollers of West Virginia, me, saying goodnight. Saying thank you for a wonderful week. Sorry I bailed out Wednesday. I'll try not to do that again. Peter Godbold is on his way with a Just Us edition of Strictly Confidential in a matter of moments. No horn section and no John Fox tonight. This is his night off, of course. And like I said, I'm getting up early to go and hang out with Dr. Bill tomorrow. So you guys have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to all of our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Join Coal River Mountain Watch. Be a part of the solution because you'll be a part of a group that it has at its core the bravest people that I know. Thanks to Ben Birch, to John Fox, to Peter Godbold. Thanks to everyone who makes the horn go with your contributions. We have almost hit the halfway point for the month of April, and we're not that far away from the halfway point of the month. Just 3 days past. Sure would be nice if we could hit our monthly goal and do it. It would be inspiring if we could do it before the month ended. Thanks to everybody who's already put forth and contributed so far. If you haven't and you have the means and this means something to you, we would certainly appreciate it. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
And good morning, world. Welcome, welcome indeed to Book Chapter and Verse 132 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively right here, nowhere else but the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. We are partly supported by Coal River Mountain Watch. Please stop by CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. One moment, going to make a little teeny slider adjustment right there, and let's see if that takes care of that. And today's Friday. Yes, indeed it is Friday. It is Friday, April the 18th, 2008. So if you are listening on a Friday evening, which is April the 18th, shortly after 9 p.m., you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate by dialing toll-free 1-800... No, that's my other talk show. 1-877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-4-head-on. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you can use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. That's area code 304-658-3333. Email them arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I have the email program open, and we'll be checking that during the breaks. You can participate that way, or you can join us in the chat room. The chat room is a great place to meet us and greet us and join us. The chat room is a good place to be this evening. You can get to the chat room by going to strictlyconfidentialradio.com And on the Strictly Confidential Radio.com page, right there in big old print, you're going to find a link to the chat room. You'll find links to all of the guests, as well as to the guests' websites, the audio archives from previous guests, past shows. As I said, the chat room, the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a very small, teeny tiny part, but I am proud to be so. You'll find links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. And speaking of the music that you hear on the show, what a wonderful evening we had last night. I have got to